Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this.
with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, let's try this again, Howdy. Okay, now this thing's on. It might be a little bit weird tonight, but you know what? We're going to get through just the same, one way or the other. It's 6 minutes past the hour. I'm a little bit late to the program. And, I've been out and about today. In fact, I just got in from Charleston, came racing up the mountain. And missed the mark just by a matter of a few minutes, so I apologize for that. On the other hand, I wouldn't have missed this Friday for the world simply because it's a beautiful day outside in wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia. It's just awfully, awfully nice. And made better so by the virtue of the fact that my beloved Mountaineers did make it past their first round test in the big dance, in the NCAA basketball tournament. But this is not a sports program. I have to keep reminding myself that, boy, they looked good. Nobody rebounds quite like the Mountaineers. But this is not a sports program, and I don't want to run anybody off. So I'm hoping this thing is now going. It certainly looks like it is to me. Silly me. See, I'm not even into the chat room yet. But I'll get better. I'll be better just as soon as I am able. As it says in Rocky Raccoon. All right, okay. So this thing's on, right? Chat room, everybody? You hear me? Just let me know anytime. I hope this thing's running. Oh, the joys of radio on a shoestring. But at any rate, we will get through these 3 hours, or not quite 3 hours now, because it's Friday on the front porch on the horn, and, well, we try to take things a little bit lighter, take things a little bit easier, take things a little bit, I don't know, maybe with our tongue in cheek, or maybe not, depending on what kind of stories that we get into. And we've got a couple, without a doubt, that are absolutely stunning in what they show, but since we do take things a little bit lighter on these Fridays on the front porch, just a little something funny out there for you, in case you hadn't heard it. This is the audio of quite possibly the most brilliant skewering of that moron Glenn Beck that has ever been done. Now, because of some technical stuff going on here, it might be a little bit, it's got Jon Stewart last night on The Daily Show, and granted there are a lot of visuals, but the verbiage is magnificent as well. Jon Stewart peeled Glenn Beck like a grape. And I offer this mainly, A, if you haven't seen it, and B, as an example of how to deal with right-wing haters. Of the fact that laughter is an antiseptic in many ways. And with that in mind, let's just have a quick listen. Any minute now. I hope.
America, I thought, as perhaps Teddy Roosevelt did, that some basic protections backed by the legal authority of the United States government, if necessary, could enhance all of our pursuit of liberty and happiness and life. And what I didn't know is that to even entertain that thought makes me a progressive. And that's not good.
Progressives think they know better than you do. They want to control every aspect of your life.
I didn't know that that's what I wanted, but I guess I want to control every aspect of your life. As progressive, I might say, oh, I think it's a good idea for an agency to monitor pollution. But I guess what I really mean is, it's in the state's interest that we be allowed to put a chip in your head that tells you when you can masturbate. Total control. And in my America, nobody tells people when they can masturbate. That is a decision that should be... That is a decision that should only be made between myself, my doctor, and that new Calvin Klein billboard outside my window that's lit 24 hours a day. No, not that one. The new one. The new one. Ew. No, the new one that's got the... Yeah. Shiny. And by the way, if you are progressive, you're not naive or a well-intentioned, stupid person. As Glenn said, you are a metastasizing malignancy on the body politic, perhaps even in our great nation's very colon. Why are you so dangerous, progressives? Because you can't stop.
The roots of progressivism lead to fascism. Evolution, not revolution. Slowly, step by step. One had the hammer and sickle, the other was a swastika. But on each banner read the words here in America of this. Social justice.
It's not that believing... I'm not saying this. I'm not saying that believing there should be a minimum standard for how much lead can be in our paint might lead to the government having the right to sterilize and kill Jews.
You two suck.
I'm not saying
that
might be the case. And that even though you didn't realize it, it's been your goal the whole time. Oh. Where's your proof? Here's my proof.
Our founders promised that our federal government would never leave this circle. And then we drifted. So we upped the circle just a little bit. Teddy Roosevelt, he took us over here. Oh, now we're into Russia territory. You ask anybody who really looks at global politics and they will tell you China is the new goal. Why do you think there's so many Maoists hanging around the White House?
You don't see it, do you? You still don't. Follow me, America. Follow me. I'm going to show you something. I'm going to show you something that is going to blow your mind. But why am I the only one that's saying it? Am I crazy or... Okay. Look
but you
at
the
ovals.
This is...
of progressive
this is
folly.
Go and watch the whole thing over at Comedy Central.
Larger.
Just do yourself that favor after the program.
And isn't it interesting that
this
they
is
go
pure,
to China.
Unmitigated
it turns out that progressives
genius.
Advocating for government...
And it goes on for... I don't know. Has Jon Stewart ever spent the first 15 minutes of his program taking someone apart? Like what you will find, in this particular instance. This is it's comedy and everybody's yucking it up. But the fact of the matter is, it has a purpose far beyond the mere jocularity. More of this, and Glenn Beck couldn't show his face in public because he has been made a complete and utter fool. So, you know, more of this, please, John Stewart. But that's just a little something to get the program rolling this evening. You know how I am about picking up where we left off. I did it last night with the nuns. Well, I'm going to do it again tonight because one of the last stories we covered last night had to do with General Sheehan, which I think is old Irish for General Ripper, saying that the massacre at Srebrenica was caused by the Dutch allowing gay people to serve openly in their military. Well, they get the news, I guess, translated into Dutch. Or, hey, wait, they teach several languages in schools in Holland, in the Netherlands. Some of them English. And as a consequence, they probably didn't even have to have it translated when the general retired Sheehan said, the case in point that I'm referring to was when the Dutch were required to defend Srebrenica against the Serbs. The battalion was under strength, poorly led, and the Serbs came into town, handcuffed the soldiers to the telephone poles, marched the Muslims off, and executed them. That was the largest massacre in Europe since World War II and the greatest offense to our precious bodily fluids. Okay, the precious bodily fluids part I added again. This guy's nuts. But they heard him. They heard him in the Netherlands. They absolutely did. And they've had a little bit to say about it since then. The Dutch Defense Ministry spokesman said, it is astonishing that a man of his stature can utter such complete nonsense. And just a word to the wise, to the Dutch. You're talking about Americans here, okay? I don't care if the man has 9 dozen stars on his shoulder boards. If he has been inculcated as a right-winger, he is dumber than a bag of homemade stupid. Plain and simple. I get no joy from saying that, but it's true. It's not astonishing, with all due respect to the Dutch Defense Ministry spokesman, it is not astonishing that General Sheehan could utter such complete nonsense. Not only is it not astonishing, I'm surprised he didn't say anything crazier. Because I guarantee you that that was as sane as that man was capable of being in front of a microphone and a bunch of senators. That's the stuff that he says in polite company. When he thinks no one's listening or everyone agrees with him, that's when he hauls out the real crazy by the bucketful. The fact of the matter is, the Srebrenica massacre brought on a number of international investigations. And there was no evidence put forward whatsoever, quote, that the sexual orientation of soldiers played a role. The Dutch ambassador to the United States offered her opinion, and she said she couldn't disagree more with General McCrazy's estimation of why the Srebrenica massacre took place. And then there's Dutch caretaker Defense Minister Eimert van Middelkoop. And he said General Sheehan's claim was damaging. He also said it was not worthy of a soldier. Then he said, I don't want to waste any more words on it. And good for you. Good for you, Minister Van Middlekoop. Don't waste any more words on it. That's my job. That's our job. It should be the job of every liberal in this country who has any respect for human rights whatsoever to make sure that General Sheehan can't walk down the sidewalk without mothers grabbing their children back toward them and pointing and saying, "See the nasty man, baby! See the nasty man! Bad man!" And finally, General Henk van den Bremen, the Dutch chief of staff at the time of the Srebrenica genocide, did bother to note that General Sheehan was spouting what he called total nonsense. So we've got total nonsense, damaging, not worthy of a soldier, couldn't disagree more, complete nonsense. And with all due respect to those good Dutch folks, they've all missed the mark. The real response would have been for any of the, but, you know, maybe they're not plugged into what's going on here with the likes of Glenn Beck and Hannity, by the way, whose charity for soldiers that Keith Olbermann once offered to contribute to if Hannity would last 60 seconds being waterboarded. Hannity's charity is a fraud. A cynical fraud. That's been, well, granted, the proof of it's been around since about 2007, but suddenly it's being noticed. It's a fraud. It's a dummy scheme. It's a, I don't know, it's an olive company storefront in front of a con job in the back room. And what the Dutch, if they were completely plugged in and really wanted to speak truth to power, what the Dutch would have said is, this is not surprising, coming from a right-wing freak and a bigot and a sick, sick, twisted, miserable excuse for a member of the human race. That's the answer. Or at least it seems it is to me. So, that's where we start with Front Porch Friday. Friday on the Front Porch. A little something else for you, though, because there is, well, with so much crazy out there to go around, by God, I would hate for us to miss out on any of it, don't you know? You know how Glenn Beck says there's all these Maoists running around at the White House? Never mind the fact that the last Maoist to be installed into the federal judiciary was a Bush nominee by the name of Joyce Rogers Brown. Maoist. And, you know, come on, if we're going to use Glenn Beck's yardstick, once a Maoist, always a Maoist. Janice Rogers Brown, Joyce Rogers Brown, can't remember. Bush nominee, sitting on the federal bench now, Maoist. Not that I like to paint people with a broad brush like that, but, you know, just sauce for the goose. But someone who is an academic Maoist, well, let's compare that person with someone who, for instance, wants to refight the Civil War. I offer you Georgia's Representative Paul Brown, who, on the floor of the House of Representatives, apparently hasn't quite gotten over the righteous ass-kicking that the South had to take in order to keep the Union together. Remember, I'm a Southerner.
But if Obamacare passes, that free insurance card that's in people's pockets is going to be as worthless as a Confederate dollar after the war between the states, the great war of Yankee aggression.
Excuse me? The great war of Yankee aggression? I mean, I joke a little bit now and then. The great... He said that on the floor of the House of Representatives. You see, that, and maybe you're not plugged in, but if it, let me translate real quick. What you will often hear Southerners do, you know, the diehard, life was better when we had them down on the plantation types. They will not call it a civil war. Just like Texas recently voted their school board to not refer to democracy in any way in describing the United States of America. Instead, we are now a constitutional republic based upon the opinion of the non-experts on the Texas Board of Education. Well, Southerners, the hardcores, don't like to refer to the Civil War. Because they say a civil war is a war fought between various factions inside one nation, and they say that they had properly seceded, and therefore it's a fight between two nations, and they didn't recognize the legitimacy of the federal government in the North, so therefore it was a war between the states. With me? Yeah. And if you're even more hardcore than that, it's not a war between the states. If you're even more hardcore than that, it is a war of Yankee aggression, a great war of Yankee aggression, or a war of Northern aggression. Because they forget that they fired the first shot. You know, General Beauregard, down there in South Carolina, shelling Fort Sumter. Hey, just taking a little target practice, that's all. Just having to lob a couple of shells into that fort there. That daggum Abraham Lincoln thought it was an act of war. Man, you can't fix to stupid. And that's kind of where we find ourselves this evening, I'm afraid. Make a little more noise, Bob, why don't you? Great War of Yankee Aggression. Because we're talking about some basic reforms to the insurance industry, nothing strong, mind you, nothing much to really get their Fort Sumters in a twist. And adding a few more people to the insurance rolls. That's the equivalent of all the dead compiled on the battlefields of Shiloh and Gettysburg, Antietam, the wilderness, the 7 days. Manassas 1 and 2. Yesterday it was, they're violating the Sabbath! Today, it's, they're starting a war? These guys want that. They desperately, desperately want that. So that's a starting place for our Friday on the front porch. But there is ever so much more. And I'm hoping you will bring a lot of it to the table. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Let's see who we've got here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, what's up?
I just had to call in because I tell you what, it's going to be repeated in about a half hour over on Comedy Central. That first 15 minutes was the best 15 minutes I've seen in a long, long time.
It was unmitigated genius.
And the thing is, just to warn anybody that wants to tape it, he comes on right before the intro with the start of it. Because it just starts with the camera on him, and he does about a half a minute, and then they go to the intro.
Oh, it's a perfect parody of every bit of Glenn Beck's shtick.
Oh, he is. I mean, it was, and the thing, like I say, the parts that Bob played are great, but I tell you what, the facial gestures and everything else is just right, so spot on.
Well, and that's why I didn't go so far into it, because a lot of it is visual. The verbal is great, but once you put it together with the visual, it's magnificent. And you can watch it all over at Comedy Central, too. So, you know, don't run away from the program.
No, but like the fun part's like when he gets conservative and libertarian up on the board and explains them. Oh. You know, it takes the words apart.
Yeah.
Okay. One other thing. I didn't know if you mentioned it last night or not, but in about 2 months, we're going to get Mr. Maher coming to town.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, Bill Maher's coming to Knoxville.
He's coming here on May 22nd to the Tennessee Theater. And tickets went on sale today. So if anybody's in the area and wants to order them, just go to TennesseeTheater.com and it'll follow the links. So we'll see how that goes. We're, I think at the 1st of May, we're going to have two shows with Kathy Griffin's going to be here. She is filming one of her specials for HBO, and they're going to film it at the Tennessee. So we'll get to be on TV a bit. Somebody, depends which one. They'll probably take both of them and just take the best parts, but that's okay. But what you were talking about, it's just amazing to watch the Republicans on there just saying how this is going to destroy America, and I'm sitting there going, it is? I mean, the CBO numbers come out, and they're actually better than what Obama and the group have been saying. You know, it's like, oh, they were saying like 120. No, it's going to be like $130 billion in savings. and they're on there saying how that's evil.
Well, it's a civil war.
I know. It's just amazing seeing some of these people out there talking, and you're just sitting there going, wait a minute, now, aren't you the same people that a few years ago to get a vote on one of the, I can't remember what it was, kept the vote open an extra 5 hours past the deadline, just so you could put the pressure on some people, and now you're complaining about them having a Sunday vote? Oh, beat us with a stick. You know, it's like, say, you're all the ones that have been dragging your feet, so don't complain the fact that this is taken is going to be done on a Sunday. You all been dragging your feet for 15 months. You know, we talked about Senator Grassley and the Max Baucus thing, where that thing went on 2 months longer than it ever should have. He should have said, we're going to discuss this for 2 weeks, then we're going to have a vote. And Mr. Grassley, if you want to get on board, that's fine. If you don't, in 2 weeks, we're going to be over this. You know, that's one problem I have with some of the leadership, is they let some of these people on our side, you know, drag this thing out twice as long as it ever should have been dragged out. They should have just said, you know, we're going to vote on this at the end of the month, whatever month that was, and said, if you ain't on board, that's fine, but we're going to have the vote. And it's put up or shut up time. And, oh, you know, some of this stuff is just, it's like saying, as well as they just kind of wears you out watching all this. But, what is, oh, yeah, have you saw the thing about Caribou Barbie?
Oh, which one?
The one about her shopping at the show, her show for reality TV or whatever it is. She's wanting $1 million to $1.5 million an episode.
Per episode?
That's the way I understood it. They were talking about it, and I'm like,
I'm in the wrong racket.
I mean, you know, well, I'll say it. Let's see, now Fox Reality, are they finally off the air or are they shutting down, I remember? So they can't run it through there. So where's Rupert going to funnel the money through or through? Somewhere he owns something. I'm sure that he'll figure out some way to pay her. Because that's what it's become. You know, it's just become a way to pay her money without having to do anything. But, it's just amazing to watch this. And now watching all these things. What was the one with the Republican who said he'd block anybody who got...
Oh, Tom Coburn, yeah.
Wow. And I'm sitting there going, what?
There's a level of paranoia involved with that, Luke, that is almost unfathomable.
I'm just sitting there going, is somebody in the Attorney General's office listening to this? Because if I'm not mistaken, that's, you're coming damn close to extortion.
You know, it's got that whiff about it, doesn't it?
Because especially when you're talking about somebody once they're out of office. Now, when they're in office, you can say certain things because they're protected. But you're saying you're going to do this to them when they're out of office?
But the other thing is he's also implying, Luke, that people out of office would be given that if you lose an election and the Obama administration offers you a job, He's implying that there's something dirty in that.
Let's see now. Who's somebody recently? There was I know there were two or three during the Bush administration. As soon as they lost their elections, they were on the payroll.
Yeah.
For the White House. You know, it's just amazing to listen to this. I tell you what, Bob, I'm going to get off because I already called once this week. But first of all, congratulations to your guys for winning.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It was a little spooky there for the first few minutes, but they got well. I wouldn't even want to think about the just dirty looks they got from Bob Huggins in the locker room at the half.
Well, the interesting thing about ours was everybody had been crying that San Diego State was going to win. Amazingly enough, right after the game, they didn't want to talk about our game. They wanted to talk about the Ohio game, you know, because almost every one of the prognosticators had San Diego State beating us and going on up the line.
Oh, and I'm being told David in Tennessee is telling me that apparently Glenn Beck did reply to the Stewart job.
Oh, this ought to be good.
I guess it's up over at Media Matters. I can't wait till after the show to see that. Or hear that. It's probably from his radio show, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's amazing, though, how they always do that. It's like, well, we say things on the radio, but we won't say it on TV where the widespread people will see us, where the normal people will see us. We have to talk about it on radio where the loons are listening.
The ones trapped in their car on the beltway in traffic or whatever that can't get away, the captives.
Oh, one other quick thing on media. The only good news about I've heard on the media this week was, and I hope this works out well, is we're going to have a new host for this week. Christiane Amanpour.
Well, it certainly will beat. I don't know, but I'm you know, all that money. Don't you suppose that all that money will buy a certain amount of editorial?
Well, that's the only thing you're worried about is what the list thing is they'll give her when said you can't bring these people on the show and you can't talk about these subjects.
And you can't ask these questions and you must always be fawning and obsequious to anybody from the right wing.
Or anybody from Israel. Because right now I think that's the story right now. Have you noticed how no one in the media is talking a whole lot about the fact that apparently the Mossad sent this group down to Dubai? You know, if Hamas...
Yeah, with dummied-up passports? Did I catch that right?
Yeah. And some of them were, like, Australian, and some of them were Israelis, and different things. And you're sitting there going, you know, if this had been the other way around, and Hamas had sent a hit group into Dubai to kill an Israeli, my God, they'd be chopping at the bit, ready to attack.
Ready?
Yeah.
The bombs would be raining like raindrops.
I know. But, you know, isn't it amazing how... And it's like apparently the Mossad doesn't understand this theory of videotape. You know, because you're wondering why those...
No, it's not. No, look, see, I disagree with you. It's not that they don't understand. They don't care. Badges? We don't need no stinking badges.
This too is true.
Yeah.
It's like every time they complain about the Iranians getting a nuclear weapon, I said, fine, let's see your list of yours.
Hey, by the way, I got to take you back off topic for a minute. Who won, Missouri or Clemson?
Sorry, what?
Who won, Missouri or Clemson?
I haven't been watching. I just got in a little while ago.
Yeah. Okay. See, that's our next opponent, whichever one that was.
So we, like I say, they're I guess you know telling us that we're going to be you know we get to fight. Apparently, what's becoming now temporarily for one round the Cinderella team. So we get to fight Ohio, which apparently had a you know from what I understand had a great game.
They shot 71% from the three mark.
So only good point is hopefully that won't run too many things at a time. And I tell you what, CBS has got to do something. Picture in picture or whatever, but quit going back and forth between.
Okay, I feel much better now because I thought I was losing my mind, going between, what was it, Marquette and Washington?
Texas.
It was Texas. It was Texas. It was the Texas game.
And I kept going back and forth, but every time I look over and go, did I hit the remote? You know?
Well, and it didn't help because, you know, Texas was in their whites with a little bit of orange on them.
Yeah.
And they bounced back to the Tennessee game. Tennessee and its whites with a little bit of orange on it, and it was going and they were going back and forth so dadgum fast. I there were a couple of times I was like, "What?"
I'm just sitting there going, "Guys, have you ever heard of the term split screen? You know, come on, it's a little old fashioned, but let's give it a try." Because I mean, God Almighty, this is just wearing me out trying to keep up with it.
So I'm glad I'm not the only one.
You know, it's.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. I'm finding out here that Mizzou. Swamped Clemson. So good. I had Missouri in the bracket to face the Mountaineers on Sunday.
Oh, say our corner of the bracket apparently has screwed everybody up.
Yeah, but it gets interesting because if you guys, here's the fun part. If you guys get by Ohio, you will face the winner of what I presume will be Ohio State or Oklahoma State, both of whom have profoundly frustrated Bruce Pearl in the last few years. So either way, you get a grudge match.
Oh, yeah, it'll be fun. You know, we'll just wait and see.
If you get past the Bobcats.
Oh, yeah. Kind of
I want y'all to get past the Bobcats.
So we'll take that. Then tomorrow the ladies are playing.
Mm-hmm. I've got my brackets pulled in both.
So I wish they'd offset theirs by a week so you aren't getting so much overlap, but that's okay. It's the way life goes.
Well, sometimes it's hard to deal with it otherwise. Luke, have a great weekend and enjoy the round ball.
Hey, one other thing is probably watch tomorrow morning and see you on the net web. I'm sure Mr. Marr is doing live tonight, so I'm sure he'll talk about it, so this ought to be good. So, like I say, with our build-up now to the weekend, this ought to be everybody put the pressure on tonight, tomorrow on the TV. All right, you have a good evening.
Bye. All right, take care, Luke. All right, bye now. Somebody, Luke, from the hills of East Tennessee. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, I think it's Missouri. Or did you know?
Yeah, I just heard. Yeah, Missouri got it.
Wow, is that my phone or is that yours?
No, that's me.
Oh, hey, is that Arkansas Pine Bluff? I don't know nothing about them, but they facing Duke and ew.
You know, there will be justice. You know, a 16 has never taken down a 1.
No, I don't know. I just sort of, you know, just the way people are pumping them up, it's like, oh, my God, enough already. You know what I mean?
Well, not just that. The 16's never taken down a 1, and when that finally happens, it's my position that the 16 who takes down the 1 has got to be, or the 1 that gets taken down by the 16 has simply got to be Duke. There will be no justice if it isn't.
Oh, God.
Coach Weaselface will have he'll have an aneurysm on the spot.
Oh, I just had a flash of his face. You know, anyway, I mean, you know, it's like whatever. I don't even, you know, I don't care so much, but I just, you know, they're just someone to hate. I guess they get the ratings for that because I think a lot of people hate them.
Well, with good reason. Oh, well, and Marty chiming in and saying, no, Duke must lose to Cal, otherwise I can't cheer for Cal in the tourney.
No.
You know, the mixed loyalties that break out of these brackets is just, it's too much fun.
Well, I see your team went on and won, huh?
Well, yeah. As a loyal Mountaineer, Sandra, I take nothing for granted.
What seed are they, though?
They're a 2 seed.
I don't know what's going on back there. Oh, 2 seed. Damn, well, they should knock off a few.
Well, if Duke didn't get its automatic 1 seed, we'd have been a 1 seed.
Yeah, you know why they got that. The executives, this ain't nothing to do with play. This is all about it's Duke is Duke, and they on TV all the damn time.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing, Coach Weaselface would have cried. You know, he would have puckered that little razor thin pointy nose down, and his little mouth would have gone up into it. Yeah. See, he has as nasty a temper as Bob Knight ever had. It's just that he's managed it much better.
Yeah, no, I've always heard that he's terrible. He's a nasty guy. That one.
And so, you know, anything that gets under his skin, I'm all in favor of.
Who else do you, I don't, I kind of haven't been paying attention to basketball in a while, but who else do you like? Or do you just stick with your little team and that's it?
No. I filled out a loyalist bracket, Sandra. I've got the Mountaineers going all the way, but that's wishful thinking. Frankly, of the ones that are out there, I think it's going to be entirely too easy for somewhere or somebody along the way to knock off Kansas. So the reality is, I've kind of got Kentucky winning the whole thing.
Oh, okay. Well, no, but who is Kentucky? Is that
Calipari? Calipari.
That crook. Yeah.
That crook. Exactly.
He's hilarious. Nothing's funnier than leaving a college and all of a sudden the program's under siege. He's like, later.
Yeah, but see, Kentucky couldn't take another season with that dude whose name everybody else has already forgotten. You know, the guy, he got bought out for $3 million just to get rid of him.
Well, no, that program is too damn big for that BS.
Too big to fail.
He had to go. And Kentucky, they don't care. They just want to win.
Oh, and with all due respect to the Kentucky element of this audience, of which there are several, you know, the Kentucky fans will not. Kentucky fans won't tolerate a 600 season, let alone a 500 season.
Like I said, that Calipari guy is just fine with them as long as he's winning. And he's such a character. I heard that dude interview. I'm like, damn, you know? It was hilarious, I have to say, whatever.
Yeah, and that, and by the way, the former coach there at Kentucky, the buyout guy, that's Billy Disco King Gillespie. He showed up there. They absolutely didn't vet him worth a dime. And he spent, he closed every joint in town, drank all the brown liquor his stomach could handle, and just had the time of his life, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and his buyout was $6 million, and they talked him down to $3 million, and he's sitting in the Barca lounger getting paid.
Shut the hell up. Well, I guess it's nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, I could have gone and screwed up Kentucky for that kind of money.
Well, what about that that monster at, is that Texas who they fired because he was locking up people in sheds and shit?
No. I know the Seton Hall guy was a real mess.
Well, I don't mean for that. I jumped sports. I'm sorry about that. I was thinking of that guy who locked up that.
Oh, you're talking about Mike Leach at Texas Tech.
Right. I mean, he was the flavor of the minute. Now, I guess they had to pay him out too, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's nice how that works out.
Well, the other story with the basketball is, like, they keep oozing on about the Cornell. You know, it's like, okay, so the elite teams are winning. You know, big whoop. I don't mean elite as in basketball powers. I mean elite as in elite schools. I don't care about no damn Ivy League in the tournament. Big whoop.
But just, you know, and it's sort of an indication of the upside-down world of the tournament. For a few precious moments, Cornell is no longer an elite Ivy League school. They're a Cinderella story.
I know it's like a joke. I might want to gag. But anyway, you know, hey. But they did knock off, who did they beat?
Temple.
And the Temple was ranked?
They were a 5 seed, yeah.
Well, anyway, I mean, the good thing about this tournament is that, you know, it really only takes one loss and you're out. So it's interesting.
And you know, the official, it's 3 or 4 weeks of complete, if you count in the tournaments too, of completely different college ball. Because the referees mostly pull off. I mean, I've seen things going on under the basket, that would qualify as crimes out on the street. And no call, let them play. I mean, the biggest screw job of the tournament so far is what the guys in the zebra suits did to Robert Morris. Those guys had Villanova, a 2 seed, beat, and the officials would not let Villanova lose.
Okay. So, well, listen. I mean, it's ratings and money, and there's a lot of money in it, like huge amounts.
Massive.
And what is betting? I mean, the amount of money betting, isn't it just billions?
It's numbers that you and I can't count, but probably can't pronounce.
Well, I was laughing because they always run this, the employers lose, you know, I saw the figure was 1.4 billion in productivity hours, you know, they were going on. I'm like, yeah, you know what I mean?
Exactly. But the thing is, it's just so daggum much fun.
You know, not only that, but it's like, you know, Americans don't get vacations, please. At least let some people have a little good time with.
Yeah, Right. I mean, in lieu of vacation.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, and that's what we do. There are certain times of the year that in lieu of vacation, we just screw off for a while.
Right.
From Thanksgiving to New Year's. You know, because if you're in any kind of a business where you have to have meetings or get something accomplished on deadline, forget it between Thanksgiving and New Year's.
Oh, exactly.
And the same thing with March Madness. You know, just not going to happen.
You know, I mean, you know, the French have August, you know, and I guess we have March.
Oh, but speaking of the French, and weird how this works out with me, Sandra, but you know how my mind is. It's a sad, sad thing. Are you following this business with the impending strike by British Airways?
Well, I thought they already they're striking now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The talks broke down today, and the strike became a reality considerably earlier today. But the story coming out of that is the level of cooperation that the workers at British Airways have achieved with people all over the world. With organized labor. I mean, even James P. Hoffa, the junior, the second, whatever he is, came out and said, you know, the Teamsters are going to support him as much as we legally can and spiritually and emotionally. You know, we're behind these folks.
Well, see, and this is supposed to be, if globalization was all that they said it would be, the natural progression. As you have freedom of capital movement, you would need to have, you know, a global union set up. I mean, that's sort of, you know, how you could view it. But, you know, of course it never happened. But that's interesting.
And what they're talking about is, you know, sort of the blue flu equivalent, if you will. So let's say because British Airways is out there saying, oh, we've no doubt that we can continue to offer our usual standard high level of service, and these organized labor groups in France and Jordan and various and sundry other countries, including the Teamsters in the U.S., are saying, maybe not. So, you know, when the plane lands and it's got to be serviced in order to get it going the next time through, you know, we can't find the fuel truck. Herbie over there, he just took off for the pizza joint. He went to get pizza, and he's in the fuel truck. The fuel truck be back in an hour or two.
Well, and so what, the French is involved? They're sort of in solidarity?
Yeah, and they don't, apparently they don't intend to, baggage? Qu'est-ce que c'est, le baggage? Can I, oui, le baggage, huh?
Hey, Bob, listen, let me try calling you back, because the phone, I'm not too sure what's going on.
I've got a different setup going on here, Sandra. It may be me.
Oh, well, okay.
What, you got some sort of an echo coming at you, or what?
Oh, no, it's just really, the volume is incredibly loud on your end, where it's
recording. Better?
Oh, yeah, that's much better.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I was trying to figure out what it was, but yeah, that's it, the volume.
Yeah, I've spent the week trying to make thing. Well, we've got a two computer set up here. Signal goes from computer A and then it streams off of computer B.
Well, the buzz is gone. If that is any help.
Well, and it is. But what I'm trying to do it all on one computer this evening.
Oh, okay. So different settings.
And hopefully, you know, the weekend's here, so I get, you know. Yay, the weekend's here, which means I've got two more days of work before I start work again. But, yeah, that's what that is.
Well, since we're mentioning Europe, so it looks like Germany is about ready to toss Greece to the tender mercies of the IMF.
I'm ashamed of myself, Sandra. I haven't done the Greece story.
Oh, no. I just saw the headlines. I think I was up early in the morning. I saw that it was on the New York Times, and I was like, damn. You know, because they're going to try to force, you know they're not going to force Greek to do the conditionalities that they do for all the other, you know, brown people.
Right. Yeah. And those include, let's see, what all? Cancel your social safety net.
Oh, no, yes. Cut public services, privatize whatever you can and whatever is available, liberalize, you're already in a trade zone, and devaluate your, oh, wait, you can't devaluate your currency. So listen, can't wait to see how that all works out. I don't mean to make fun, but it's like, you know what? How's that going to work, you know? You can't devaluate the currency, which is a huge component in, A, fucking people over and, you know, paying back your debts.
Exactly. And like I said, the one person who's done it justice is Cynthia Black on the weekend. She's done a magnificent job with it. It's sickening to behold. And the fact that, I expect the United States to behave in a certain fashion. But you're right. I did read where I guess Germany really is getting ready to throw them under the bus, too.
Well, the thing is, though, you know.
And that's disturbing.
But the thing is that you have when they decided to do the euro, it all was all nice and it, you know, it was a good thought. But the reality is that Germany has a whole different mentality for their monetary policies than Spain or, you know, France. Or, you know what I mean? People have different ways of managing their fiscal policies. And so there was no way that this wasn't going to happen at some point. Because the German public, they're not about to bail out, you know, some one German minister said, oh, can we have some islands? I was rolling. So, of course, the Greeks are freaking out. It's just like they want a new, what is the German word for bigger, lieber, strom, or, you know, back in the day.
Lebensraum?
Yes. And that's what the Greeks are saying. So, hello. I'm sorry. You know, I don't know what's wrong with me today, Bob. I'm just sort of, I think this healthcare thing has done me in. I'm gone crazy.
Well, and I guess as things stand, we'll have an answer come Sunday, right?
No, please. I just said, you know, it's an interesting, I've read a couple of interesting articles that it crossed my mind, but it really has solidified the whole idea that these progressives, they, you know, regardless if the thing is going to pass, the whole idea that they have capitulated, they've got nothing. Zero, Bob.
No.
I mean, and what is that? You know, I mean, in the bigger picture, that is really quite scary because they can be wrong about anything.
And if you'll fall for, what's that old saying? If you believe everything, if you don't believe anything, you'll fall for everything. I forget what it is, but along those lines. And I'm. There are a lot of numbers, Lottie in the chat room was kind enough to provide this with me, provide this to me earlier in the day. Jane Hampshire over at FireDogLight.com, whom I have real problems with now.
After the whole the Kucinich thing, I knew it was so over the top, but
She provided this 18-point myth memo about the healthcare bill, and you know it's nicely cited and everything. But nowhere in this list can I find this bill won't really keep any portion of those 45,000 Americans who die every year from dying.
Oh no! And the thing is, to me, it's worse than that because there is no control. You know that whole thing about economic power being subjected to democratic controls.
Yeah.
Where's that in that bill, Bob?
Well, according to this list, myth number 9: this bill employs nearly every cost control idea available to bring down costs. That's the myth. Fact, this bill does not bring down costs and leaves out nearly every key cost control measure, including public option, Medicare buy-in, drug reimportation, Medicare drug price negotiation, and shorter pathway to generic biologics.
Well, no, but didn't they just throw out that that comment that Obama was trying to throw out there saying that there would be some agency to prevent random rate hikes?
Yeah, I have no doubt, Sandra, that this thing is not anything even remotely resembling a perfect bill, or maybe in many instances even a good bill or the best bill we could get under bad circumstances. What it is a bill.
Well, no, but the thing is, though, I understand that the Democratic Party, as it's constituted right now, you know, they're, you know, I'm sure they've gotten alarm bells that they have to put something through now or it's over the cliff. But so progressives, look at the Stupak block. Hello, they're still there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it goes back and forth as to how much the Stupak block is now.
No, I understand, but all I mean is that, you know, you negotiate, you have something you're threatening, and you get something in return. But the progressives just took people's money promising they were going to vote against something without a cost control mechanism, and they've all capitulated. Are they returning the money? Dennis
is, yeah.
You know, and I thought that was interesting, but
I thought it was honorable.
No, I thought, well, you know, he really tries his best to keep it going, keep it in line. But I'm just sort of, I'm a bit disturbed for future endeavors for the progressive wing of the party if they can't stand up to anything.
Well, the test here, Sandra, as far as I can tell, is will there be a willingness to continue working on this? And if they just check the box and move on and forget all about this and don't go back and try to do fixes, then there's a problem.
Well, no.
But you know, and I'm afraid that may happen. I have a legitimate fear that may happen.
I have a legitimate fear of the fact that, you know, I downloaded a copy of the bill and was, you know, trying my best to read some of it. And I was scared that the very first page is all about who's paying and how much. And, oh, looky here, 400% of the poverty line, you're paying like 8.59% of your income is going to that BS. 400% of poverty is about $43,000. And you have to come up with $4,000 for it? You know what I'm saying? I'm telling you, how's that working out?
And I think is that the out of pocket as you understand it, or is that where the subsidies end?
No, if you look at the very first, I'm telling you, I was reading it, I'm saying, okay, 133% of poverty puts you at 14,000, and they still want 2%. You understand what I'm saying with this? And it goes down, 200% of the poverty, they want 4%, blah, 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 and so forth.
No, I'm gonna spend the weekend trying to get my hands on it and read it. If you would shoot me the link you've got,
I just downloaded a PDF file, and you know, I'm sitting there putting in search this, whatever horror words I can find, and you know, and just sort of read here and there because it's hard to follow that kind of lingo. I'm not, you know,
right.
But there's some, you know, just look at the tax code is being altered and the way they're gonna generate. I guess, I'm sorry, it seems like it's taking money from people who barely are able to survive to provide funds for people who have nothing, and the people who really have something are once again left alone. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Now, I could be wrong, and, you know, please, I would like for more people that I know to try to read some of it, but those numbers are kind of disturbing. I don't know where the subsidies kick in, and you still have co-pays probably, right? I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but also, Sandra, I think you and I are talking about about the bill not going far enough. For me, I really do have to come down to this question of if not now, when? If not us, who?
Well, no, but what is it going to be? Like about 180,000 people dead before the thing even kicks in, whatever it delivers?
I don't know. No, because some of the stuff does start happening next year.
Okay.
Yeah, so 45,000 or some portion thereof.
Well, right, but you can't, they won't, because I found out that it's taken so long to implement because of the so-called cost. That's the excuse that's being given.
Yeah. This thing's a real problem for me. There's nothing here that I'm in love with. And maybe I got hung up on something in D.C. at that one meeting that's gone now. But I can't find where anybody's talking about this Medicaid buy-in.
Well,
Is it gone?
There is no, that's gone. Maybe you can find out in the chat room or someone listening who knows for sure, but I got the impression that absolutely anything that smacks of a public anything is gone from this bill.
Because what this what this Jane Hampshire piece offers is, while details are limited, there is apparently a Plan B alternative that the White House was considering as recently as 2 weeks ago, which would evidently expand existing programs, Medicaid and SCHIP, and would cover half the people at a quarter of the price, but it would not force an unbearable financial burden to those who are already struggling to get by. But, you know, when you're using adverbs like apparently...
No.
I'm not sure that she has it right that it hurts more people than it helps.
Well, I don't, you know, like I said, I mean, you know, I have to agree with you on the idea that if it's going to cover more people, it's kind of hard to, you know, completely crap on it.
Well, her first myth, and see, this is one of the dodgy things when you write stuff like this. When you're identifying the myths, those are myths that you kind of get to make up because you're the author. And for her, myth number one is this is a universal health care bill. Is there anybody out there that thinks this? Because I don't. But she says that that's myth number one.
People actually think that it is?
I mean, when you identify it as a myth, that means it's publicly believed, right? And
I don't know what public she's running in, but most people I talk to think it's a fucking giveaway to some other huge industry, and they're going to be taxed more. That's what they think.
And so as a result of, you know, myth number one, this is a universal health care bill, well, she then deconstructs it as follows. The bill is neither universal health care nor universal health insurance, according to the Congressional Budget Office. And this is telling. Total uninsured in 2019 with no bill, 54 million. Total uninsured in 2019 with the Senate bill, 24 million. So that's 30 million who will have some kind of coverage. Now, the question is, can they afford to use it?
Not only that, but is it going to be like I predicted a year ago?
With a $10,000 deductible?
And... like insurance. You know, just really crappy, like car insurance. You know, where you get the bare minimum so you can get from A to B. Are you going to have a coverage that I'll buy this so I don't have to pay the penalty type of coverage? You know, let me start a corporation to provide that kind of coverage. Hi. You can, you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Right. So you know what time it is.
And
more people, they're going to be preyed on by some rapacious entity like Check and Go, but it's going to be Healthcare and Go. So you can avoid the penalty from the IRS. I know. I may be wrong. I'm sure I'm full of shit.
No, I don't necessarily think that you are, Sandra. I have become so jaded in this process that I can't rely on anything but words in front of my face that I know are at least arguably neutral.
Well, so you're trying to say that Hampshire is creating straw men to knock down? Is that what's going on?
That's what it looks like. Big parts of this look like that to me. Because she's coming to this process with an axe to grind. Everybody in the, you know, left liberal blogosphere, whatever you want to call it, knows that this woman is wholeheartedly dead set against this bill. Now, I don't know if that's because it doesn't give Jane Hampshire a pony
or what,
but she is. And as such, because I know she has such an axe to grind and because she has ground it so noisily, I am inclined to view her take on it with a fair degree of skepticism.
Well, I thought that she was the one haranguing the Senate.
She was.
But she's against it, too? I don't understand.
No, she was haranguing Kucinich, wanting him to continue to vote against the bill.
Oh, okay.
And frankly, I don't know how to put this, except to say I trust Dennis Kucinich more than I trust Jane Hampshire. And when Dennis says it doesn't do what he wants done, doesn't do what needs done, I'm inclined to believe him. But when he says we got to do something, I believe that too. And I also recognize, Sandra, how dangerous it is when I use that word that I so roundly criticize others for using, believe.
Well, if it wasn't such, if it wasn't solidifying the insurers so much, you know, I wouldn't be so terrified of it. But, you know, the whole idea of, oh, we'll work on it some more, along with the Supreme Court decision. I mean, my God, they're going to have so much money by the end of this decade. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so much more power.
But you know what? They would have that with or without because of with or without this bill. They would have that because of Citizens United.
Well, I don't. I mean, I, you know, I'm just, you know, I.
I mean, do you understand?
Well, no, I mean, they would, but not if they don't have 30 million, 40 million people forced to give their money to them on top of what they can contribute. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And
you know what? If that's what it turns out to be, if that's what it turns out to be, Sandra, the Democratic Congress will be turned out into the streets so fast that it'll make its own head spin. And we've already heard from Newt Gingrich and the rest of the crowd that they will move immediately to overturn all of this.
They're not going to overturn. Well, okay. I just see it as, it just seems like it's just solidifying the stranglehold, you know, of the whole.
You know, look at what Idaho's done. Look at what Virginia is contemplating. You know, these smacks of secessionism laws that say no citizen of this here old Dominion shall be required, because they free people, shall be required to purchase any form of government health insurance.
Okay, so then that will go to court, right?
If somebody sues.
Well, I don't know. I just am sort
of... But state laws are interpreted by state courts unless there's a federal question. And these are state laws within state constitutions. So depending on the makeup, what you're going to wind up with is a continuing mess because it has not been fully federalized.
Okay, well, no, I just, you know, that's a frightening prospect. So what you're painting is just sort of a real hot mess, Bob, you know?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, and so this vote is supposed to come down on Sunday?
Yes.
When
all these good right-wing Republicans would rather be on their knees praying to Jesus.
And you know what? I almost spit out while I was drinking when you played that freak who was talking about Yankee aggression. I looked around. I said, am I in a time machine? Is it 1857? What's happening?
Don't go to Georgia. That's what's happening.
No.
I don't care if they open the world's best roller coaster at Six Flags. Don't go.
No, but see, that's some scary. I mean, what? I was stunned listening to that, thinking, are you kidding me with this? The war between the states? What?
The war of Yankee aggression.
Yeah, no, that. And he threw in between the states, too, didn't he? That's my favorite.
Yeah, that is. And I know you know the meaning. You know the code when that one gets hauled out.
Ooh, I was like, oh no! But anyway, it's obviously this is driving those people crazy too.
They are completely out of their poor little trees.
But in the meanwhile, I have to say another bill that sort of, I guess, was introduced was that madness from McCain. He's crazy too.
Oh.
The one where they can just lock up Americans, Jose Padilla style.
Yeah, I read a little bit about that, and if you don't read something like that and you get the cold chills, and the thing is, you got why did he do that? I have a theory, but I want to hear from you. Why did McCain do that?
Oh no, I got to hear yours because I think that, you know, he's some sort of twisted F that's still suffering from problems from being tortured. I have no idea. You tell me.
Oh, well, I'll buy all of that, but I'll see your twisted effort and raise you a pander to the birth or death or tenth or booger eaters.
Well, because he's being challenged by some idiot, right? That freak. What was that comment he made?
Oh, J.D. Hayworth, who wants... Yeah, the guy that wants to marry his horse.
Oh, snap. Yuck.
But this is a pander to that.
And why is, I forget his name. Horrible Connecticut senator.
Oh, Lieberman.
Why is he involved? Because he's some sort of sadist, right?
Well, no, because if John McCain laughs real big or sneezes and opens it, you can see Joe Lieberman's little shining eyes back there in the back of his throat.
Oh God, those two rhymes. Remember the.
But see,
the
but no. See, here's the furtherance of the twistedness of it all. So that thing is a pander, right?
Yeah.
It's a total pander to the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the deathers and the booger eaters. I got to get them all in there. It's a total pander, but their own hypocrisy is borne out by the pandering because this is the kind of stuff they say they're afraid of.
The government to have that kind of arbitrary detention power.
But the law's being proposed by a respectable white man.
Well, no, but they don't care. I mean, they're expecting the Negro to be gone when it gets in full effect, though, right?
On the boat to Liberia, I guess.
Oh, shit. You know it had to disintegrate to this. But, yeah, no, because, you know what? It's just sick. I read the first part of that, and it really does say, oh, well, there anything else is left to the president's prerogative. I'm like, huh? He can do what? It's crazy, man.
I know, and this is where, you know, if I had it handy, I'd cue up that song, It's My Prerogative.
Oh, God. Well, listen, I have to give a quick shout-out to Juanita. She's been great this week. Oh, my God. And just a hello to Reverbo, just for GP. And I have to ask, what is that sound that he does? Sometime, if he has some sort of sound effect.
No, he's got a little bell. When I get things right, he's got a little bell that he plays.
It just sounds like some Nauticus thing. It's absolutely crazy.
It's the brass fittings clanging against each other in the rigging of his yacht.
Oh, God. That is fantastic. Anyway, listen, I'll leave you, because I really am sort of borderline hysterical at this point. So have a good weekend.
All right, Sandra. You know, if you have to, just strap down and you know, do the Odysseus thing. Plug your ears with wax and, you know, just try to get through the ride.
Oh, God. Okay.
All right. Bye. Later. Bye now. Our buddy Sandra calling from California and hanging on by her own admission, hanging on to her sanity for all she is worth. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Bob?
Yes.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm pretty good, Jim. How about you?
Okay, listen, just a couple things. First, as far as this health care bill is concerned, I know about as much as you can put in the head of a thimble, and I've tried to read what I can, and I've spent most of my life reading and writing and generating governmental bureaucratic thunder speak, and I swear to God, it's almost like trying to compute the value of pi to an even number because it's a transcendental figure without resolution.
After a while, your eyes roll back in your head and the things in front of your face begin to swim a little bit. I know, that's been my experience so far.
Mine, too. And I've tried to contact D.C., and most of the lines are busy and stuff like that. But I guess we'll find out on Sunday what happens. But could we go back to a couple of things that you were talking about earlier?
Certainly. It's Friday. Go anywhere you want to.
Well, first... I always enjoy your talk about love of sport. And, you know, for 2 weeks in February, my mind was distracted and taken away from a lot of these things that we've been talking about by the Olympics.
Right. A lot of people were.
And every 2 years, I always, when I see the Olympic flame kindled, it shines to me like a beacon of hope for the world. And when the words are issued, I summon the youth of the world. it will be so wonderful that the people who came wore their athletic uniforms and not military ones. And the competition will be held in that.
Well, indeed, Jim. And I wish we could manage somehow or another on a global basis to adopt the rest of the rules surrounding the early Olympiad. And I don't mean the guys competing in the nude. I mean a cessation to all conflicts everywhere.
That would truly be wonderful. And secondly, as far as Glenn Beck is concerned, I refer to him as Bell Watling Beck, because in the words of the late immortal Hattie McDaniels, whose birthday I think should be a banking national holiday, I ain't never seen hair no color in my life.
Well, it was pointed out earlier on the show, he's been going through a different range of colorations too, Jim. Did you see him when he was kind of red, kind of strawberry blonde, and then other times he's sort of a neo-Nazi platinum, you know, Marlena Dietrich kind of thing?
You could signal the Seventh Fleet with his head.
He's got issues, Jim.
The man I have seen on occasion, and I would just as soon watch a VCR recording of one of those colorectal exams.
It's about the same, and you know what? It has about the same content, frankly.
At least, you know, you're looking at a genuine asshole.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And another thing I wanted to just mention briefly, I was reading a couple of days ago in La Stampa, the Italian newspaper in Turin, the English language version, about the successor of John Paul George Ringo, our friend Benedict the 16th.
Yes.
And what he did with that bishop and how he allowed him, or he lifted the ban of excommunication, because this man, of course, had denied the Holocaust.
Right.
But yet, now he has been brought back into the fold of the church, has been restored to his position as a prince of the church, and that is something I simply do not understand.
Well, I think the only way to understand it, Jim, is to understand it in context. With John Paul II, you got to go back to John Paul I, and frankly, you got to go to John the 23rd. There were real reforms taking place in the church to sort of drag it kicking and screaming into the 20th century.
He was a good pope.
And John Paul II was a much more hardline conservative than most people were allowed to know. He packed the College of Cardinals with hardline conservatives, and frankly, you know, he selected the current pope to serve as his chief inquisitor in the Office of the Doctrine of the Faith, you know.
Well, basically, it was the successor to the Inquisition.
Yes, exactly. And the fact that, you know, and also brought back into prominence, if you can imagine, Jim, under the papacy of John Paul II, brought back into prominence the office of chief exorcist.
I thought they were sort of trying to hide that and trying to sort of keep that and the Roman ritual in the background, unless they had to pull it out, but they were sort of embarrassed by it, but because of the, you know, the development of modern psych.
Well, they were, but all of that went into retrograde motion with John Paul II.
Well, I think he was one of the ones who tried to reinculcate the mysticism and things of that nature that is inherent in church doctrine. And his motto was, we may be fewer, but we're stronger. That's how it was explained to me.
But also during his papacy, you have the canonization of Jose Maria Escriva, who was the father of, Opus Dei.
Oh, those are some very, very strange people.
Well, consider the words of Jose Maria Escriva. I'm sorry. Saint Jose Maria Escriva.
Yeah,
he said Hitler got a bad rap. He couldn't possibly have killed 6 million Jews. It couldn't possibly have been more than 4 million.
The accurate figure was, if you read the Wannsee Conference, 11 million.
Right, and so here's an apologist who was a Franco loyalist in Spain, basically offering. Not necessarily ex cathedra, but offering apologia for the Holocaust. This guy's a saint.
It simply boggles the mind. And I've tried in the past to be as open and as kind to Vatican as I possibly can, but at this point it stopped.
Well, you know, we haven't talked in a long, long time, Jim, but I actually thought of you back when the ruling came down that the Roman Church was going to raid the Episcopal Church and the Anglican Church. And I thought, my heavenly days, that's what must Jim think of that? You probably saw it. They put out the statement that if you're a member of the Anglican Church, but you really don't agree with gay folk being ordained as ministers or anything like that, come on over to the Church of Rome because we still don't like them.
Well, they say Rome, sweet Rome. Well, I've been to Rome, and I'll tell you this, that part of Rome I don't find too sweet. And also mentioned in the same article right below this in La Stampa was that Benedict has a new place to live, and he was able to bring back one of his loyal retainers or keep her as his housekeeper or something like that.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, when I think of the first pope, Peter,
right,
according to tradition, and the humility of that man.
Crucified upside down on an X, wasn't he?
Exactly. As a matter of fact, I don't know if this is Hollywood or whatever, because my knowledge of church history has sort of been kind of blotted out, I guess. I think that Peter was leaving Rome. He was going to go back to Rome, and he did because he was asked to by Christ. I don't know if that's true or not. And they did. Nero had him crucified upside down because Peter said he wasn't worth being crucified in the same way as
right. And they did it. And they did it with an X form instead of the traditional, you know, T cross for the same reason.
Yeah, they did.
But I don't know. I don't know if you caught this, but there was a new announcement today that a letter has been sent from Rome to Ireland because of the really, really huge building backlash over the abuse scandals there, saying that, well, now we'll have a little bit more transparency in this. You know, it's that old excuse of, mistakes were made.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, the funny thing about it was when Adolf Hitler committed suicide, I think it was Pius who had a pontifical mass said for him.
Yes.
That really blows my mind. It really does.
Well, if you do the research, the events surrounding the death of John the 23rd are, I would say, and I mean no disrespect because I know this topic means a great deal to you as well, the events surrounding the death of John the 23rd are as suspect as the events surrounding the death of John Kennedy.
I've heard that, too. And, you know, Cardinal Roncalli, or John the 23rd, was a decent human being. He really was. And he called Vatican II. And I have spoken with several Catholic friends who, well, you can't really talk to them about it because they get very upset, but I said there needs to be a Vatican III, and the church needs to come into the 21st century.
But if I fear, you know, that is along the same lines, Jim, as some of our friends and some of our comrades, fellow soldiers, whatever you want to call them, on our side of the political spectrum, who say that they want a constitutional convention in the United States, and while it is philosophically or speculatively satisfying, it fills me with horror and dread to think of what American corporate interests could do to a constitutional convention. By the same token, given the stranglehold that the conservative element of the church has on its hierarchy right now, Vatican III would probably wind up undoing what is still left of Vatican II, because there's been an overall attempt to roll it back with real seriousness. You know, you've got this Mel Gibson brand of the church that operates out in Malibu, and frankly, there are those churches all over the country.
Oh, he's just absolutely nuts.
Well, yeah, but he and a lot of other people, you know, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia are alleged to all be Opus Dei.
And 25% of the Congress is Roman Catholic.
And, you know, and I wonder, just because I know what Opus Dei's attitude is toward women, how must they be getting along with Justice Sotomayor? Not so good, I'll bet.
I would hazard to say that you're absolutely 100% correct on that notion. Really.
But going back to Cardinal Roncalli, who later became John the 23rd, and what you said about the pontifical mass for Adolf Hitler, one of the things that got Cardinal Roncalli at the time in horrible, horrible, horrible trouble, Jim, was the fact that he directly confronted the church for refusing to outright excommunicate. That was his, you know, I mean, he was, they held swords over his head, you know, threatened everything you can threaten a cardinal with.
To excommunicate Adolf Hitler?
Yeah.
You know, I'd forgotten that. I swear.
He was the one who started all of that. He's the one who asked that question, and he was silenced. He was forbidden from ever saying it again, under pain of everything that the church had to throw at him.
Well, that is indeed unfortunate, because as we've talked in the past, I've spent a good deal of my life studying that period of history and know a good bit about the Third Reich and what led it to its establishment and its downfall. And I want to say categorically that just because of my affinity for enjoying studying that period, I have no sympathy with them whatsoever and what they did.
Oh, I have no doubt of it. And, you know, Lottie in the chat room is pointing out that it was stated church doctrine at the time of Hitler's suicide that was that was a mortal sin. That was excommunication material. Couldn't be buried on sacred ground, condemned to hell, all of that. Couldn't even have a mass said over them.
And did it on Walpurgisnacht on April 30th.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, dovetailing on that, after the suicide of a number of those people and execution of the bigwigs at Nuremberg, the ones who escaped, like Adolf Eichmann, Joseph Mengele, their passports, their Red Cross passports, were signed by a Catholic Monsignor. And they were allowed to escape through the rat line to Argentina. And I think Martin Bormann may have been one of those, because now they found evidence that Martin Bormann did escape.
I'll be doggone.
He was buried in Paraguay, and then he was remains were transported back to Berlin, and then they found all of a sudden his remains, but when they looked at the body, it was surrounded by clay. Now, I've been to Berlin, and it's sandy as hell, and there isn't any clay in Berlin, okay? And they found the very same clay that was attached to Martin Bormann's skeleton to be that in Paraguay. They went back to where Bormann was buried, and they found that the body had, in fact, been exhumed.
I'll be darned. And, of course, you know, I can't think of Paraguay without thinking of the massive, and, you know, this isn't urban myth or anything like that, the massive land purchase that the Bushes did in Paraguay right before they left office. You know, just needed a little vacation hideaway in case things got hot. I don't think George was ever quite so sure that the Democrats would let him get away with everything the Democrats let him get away with.
No, that man should have been tried and for crimes against humanity. That's all there is to it. And, you know, I've said that before and I'll say it again, as well as Dick Cheney and all those other people. And I could not believe what Cheney's daughter said about the lawyers who are going to defend these people who are accused in some type of terrorist thing, where she would deny, what did she refer to them as? This is not his lesbian daughter, but the other one.
No, no, no. This is Mary. The Guantanamo 7, is that what she called them?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, she would deny legal benefit of counsel. And I thought to myself, if they had your old man up there and had him in the dock, you sure as hell want him to have a lawyer.
He would have the best lawyer that money could buy, without a doubt.
Exactly.
And the right wing would be having a fit about, you know, his right to counsel.
Oh, of course, of course.
But, you know, when you get right down to it, that woman is little more than her daddy in a cheap wig. You know, if you look at her closely, she looks like him. You know, give her 15, 20 more years and a carton a week of Marlboro Reds, and she'll sound like him.
I had the pleasure of meeting him at Fort Jackson years ago, back during Desert Storm 1. And I looked into that man's eyes. This was sort of like a command performance type thing when he came down there. And he had come down there to castigate the public affairs officer for saying too much about a certain unit in the Gulf there. And I actually had to go through a line and meet him. And when I looked into his eyes, and you know, the eyes are the well of the soul.
Sure.
It's one of the meanest human beings I have ever seen in my life. And I can tell you, sir, I have met some mean sons of bitches.
Well, coming from you, I take that as gospel because, just to hear his growl,
he's just a very hateful person. And, you know, anybody who would drop the F-bomb on a member of the most august body in this country, the United States Senate, right there in the well of the Senate, and have no, and, you know, not even.
And later on say he had it coming to him. You know, because.
I mean, and Cheney, you know, told the guy to go F himself. Was it Senator Leahy?
It was Senator Leahy.
I couldn't believe that. I thought to myself, what depths have we descended to in our leadership to have language like that? And, you know, well, in any case, I've taken up enough of your time, and I appreciate the time that you've given me.
Enjoyable conversation, and have yourself a good weekend, Jim.
And the same to you, sir.
All right, take care.
Good night.
And bye now. And let's see. A wellspring of information is Jim. Let's roll on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, boy. It's this whole religion thing, it just never ceases to amaze me. It's just, I mean, and the thing is that Pope John Paul II, you're right. He was thought to be, I mean, the perception is, he is so different from the reality, because when you think about it, yeah, Ratzinger is crazy, but the people that elected him, they didn't all just suddenly appear out of nowhere.
No, they were put there for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just like, you know, even I bought into the, oh, John Paul II, he's not so bad. Then you realize, then when you do think about it rationally, wow.
No, and by the way, I'm getting corrected. I got my Cheney daughters mixed up. It's not Mary, but Liz. It's Liz Cheney that's her daddy in a cheap wig. But Garrett, yeah. You're right. And that's, you know, that's a function of the careful manipulation of public image, otherwise known as messaging, otherwise known as what our side is having such a darned hard time figuring out. You know, like I mentioned talking with Jim, this letter is going out to the Irish church, and I guess it's supposed to smooth everything over. But you know what? Benedict's in trouble, and his whole papacy's in trouble, and the church is in trouble.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, let's face it, you have to figure one of the biggest places, you know, pools of subjects is America. And they have been at odds with how a lot, especially just on the abortion thing, we won't even get into the whole homosexuality issue, but just on the abortion issue with so much of American Catholics, it's not even funny. I mean,
well, I'm looking at the Associated Press story about the letter, and it says Pope Benedict XVI said Wednesday, 2 days ago, he hopes his upcoming letter to the Irish faithful on the sex abuse scandal in Ireland's Catholic Church helps with, quote, repentance, healing, and renewal. Who is it that he wants to repent? You know, because he was the author under John Paul II of the doctrine and the protocols that it went so far as threatening parents of abused children with excommunication if they went public with the charges. The only thing that'll help with repentance, healing, and renewal in the church is prosecution, imprisonment, and what, excommunication?
And that's been long overdue. I mean, it has been a joke. This issue has not just passed the scandal. It is a, and not just a joke. It is a cliche. It is a cliche now. That is you know, how bad it is.
You know, the cover-ups, Garrett, in Ireland, for instance, went from the 1930s into the 1990s, and for all we know, are still going on. More than 15,000 children were involved, and here's the fun part. Several Irish bishops agreed to resign. Two stepped down on Christmas Day. Others, they're still saying, no, we won't resign. And just for the, you know, the big punchline here, the Pope hasn't accepted the resignation offers of three of the bishops who were implicated in cover-ups in Dublin. He hasn't accepted their resignations.
Yeah, that's just disgusting on its face. I mean,
but this is all, you know, resigning from the church. Where is the they're being prosecuted? Because,
yeah,
you know, and I won't speak to any knowledge of Irish law. I don't know. I don't have any. And precious little of law over here. But I do know dadgum good and well that if either you or I were accused of doing what so many priests have done to so many little boys, we would not have the church folding its loving and encircling and, frankly, all-consuming wing over us.
Yeah,
we would be left to the tender mercies of the justice system, which we would deserve.
Yeah, and more importantly, we'd be on top of it. They'd have to be watching us in the prison because the prisoners would be, you know, getting a little justice of their own. I mean, you know, because prisoners, they don't like the sex offenders. They have honor, and they know that that's not definitely pretty far low on it. I mean, that's one of the lowest things you can do is to take someone that's completely innocent and, you know, just do that to them. I mean, for no other reason than because my understanding of the psychology of it, it's not about them being gay or straight, because most of them are straight. It's about the power. Rape, that's what rape is, and especially when it's, you know, doing that to
It is an act of power, and it is an act of violence.
Yes. And it is the most despicable type of violence. I mean, but yet the church still does it. I mean, and Ireland's a stronghold for the Catholic Church. I mean, a legendary stronghold. I mean, that's part of the whole Northern and regular Ireland issue there is.
Sure it is. And it, as Thomas Cahill noted in a beautiful essay for St. Patrick's Day, the irony of all of which is not lost on me, it was the Irish Church preserved knowledge, the ancient classical knowledge for rising Western civilization.
Yeah,
and it was the Irish Church has always been somewhat at odds with the hierarchy at Rome, because so much of the Irish Church also incorporated, you know, for all of the mythology of Patrick chasing the snakes out of Ireland, which is a metaphor for running out the pagans. The Church never ran the pagans out of anywhere; they absorbed them. You know, for our obligatory Star Trek reference for the night. They were far more Borg than they were anything else. They assimilated, and the home of the mysticism, at least the Northern European home of mysticism in the church, is Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, and that was, I mean, that's what the, I mean, to some extent, that was the most long-lived of the church. I mean, like, I'm sure you've read Beowulf, too, and, I mean, there you could pick out all the moments that the translators of the church, you know, added in to kind of smooth over the whole pagan elements of that.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And you know what? Well, I was going to go ahead and say that there's been a global shift, though, in the church, and that is, well, Lottie has pointed this out very well in his shorthand statement, that the vast majority of the world's Roman Catholics practice with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other. And by that meaning that it's the superstitious developing world where the church is doing its only growth. It's not growing in the United States. Lord knows it's shrinking in Europe.
Well, I mean, it's because, let's face it, I mean, on its face, religion is a lot of it is irrational. I mean, you know, yes, it's possible to have faith and, you know, and be, you know, rational and all that. I mean, look at all the scientists in this world that, you know, throughout history that have kicked off the church and have been, you know, religious. I mean, even Darwin was religious, for God's sake. I mean, you know, it's possible, but, I mean, it's kind of a, you know, it's a kind of if, but, you know, type of thing. You kind of, you know, faith, just by its definition, is kind of anti-rational. In the developing world, I mean, let's face it, it's developing for a reason. It's, they don't have the resources that we do in terms of, you know, books and all that. I mean, especially some of these countries that have had civil wars and, oh, I don't know, massive earthquakes throughout their history. I mean, it's just, you know, it's kind of, and you know, Europe and America have just been around and they've kind of, you know, grown up. I mean, especially Europe. Europe's kind of got no...
Threw away the dead chicken, or cooked the dead chicken.
Yeah, Europe's had two world wars to kind of realize that being rational is kind of a good thing. I mean...
It makes the... Well, being rational in many ways makes the world a much less scary place. Now, I mean, I have here in the studio, and one of these days when we've got it all set up and we're ready to do video, they'll be prominently displayed. I have two friends that do the show with me every night, Garrett. I have a pair of gargoyles.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is sitting with his bat wings folded, and he's reading a book. The other one is kneeling while gnawing on some poor damned soul's thigh bone. Because, you know, that's what gargoyles do. But they sit over me as I do the program, much like gargoyles do on Gothic cathedrals all across Europe. But you know what? There was a time when people believed that gargoyles were real.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why there's a gargoyles cartoon and why it deals with Shakespeare and all that, because it's the same, it's that period of time. It's just when people were just out in the weeds, and they were scared. I mean, because Roman Empire breaks apart, and oh my God!
Well, and a lot of this stuff, like the gnawing on the bones business, arises. Oh goodness, what's the? Barbara Tuchman wrote a brilliant history of the Middle Ages around the time of the Black Death, called A Distant Mirror, and she focuses on one particular French castle, and it's absolutely magnificent. But she points out that a lot of that death iconography rose up at the time of the plague, and people's uncertainty as to what. I mean, it was genuinely a profound existential crisis for the entire European continent. Because everything was called into question. And it's only after the Black Plague that you get the rise of the merchant class and the so-called first flowerings of the middle class, which leads to the Renaissance and leads to the first legitimate challenges to the power of the church. And so all of that, you know, all of that stuff is self-contained in those grisly images of which the church is so inestimably fond.
Yeah, because, I mean, they at least subconsciously, they know they have to keep a hold of that in order to have their have power over people. I mean, you know, it's detective of, I guess, well, I don't want to call the churches bullies because, I mean, I know there's got to be religious people listening, but, I mean, it's just like organizations that have great power and, you know, at some point have people in them that are willing to abuse that power. Fear is a mighty powerful weapon.
Oh, without a doubt it is.
Yes. I mean, and, you know, that's why the fear explains just about how so much has, you know, happened in history. I mean, you get the people, something bad happens, whether or not it's in the control of the people involved, and you just play off that, and bad things happen, which leads to more reasons to be afraid. It's a cycle.
And there's a portion of the world that is still caught up in all of that. Every month or so, or every couple of months, you'll see some story of some poor little child in Brazil who has been tortured to death by a priest who was convinced that he was full of demons. And yet, you know, as in our conversation with Jim, I don't mean our as in like I'm Queen Victoria or anything, I mean all of us. But as in our conversation with Jim, the church still has an office of chief exorcist in the 21st century. In the 21st century, the 2,100 years after the birth of Christ, the church at Rome still has an office of a guy who is head of all the other guys who are there in case a demon happens to possess someone.
And I'm sure that it's had incredible growth, that you could chart the growth to about 1973 when a certain movie came out.
Oh, that was good for business, actually.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That was probably the, it's like the House Un-American Activities Committee. I mean, that's still, if I'm not mistaken, it still exists, but, you know, it's like nothing. But, you know, but it's still, nobody ever bothered to pull the plug. But when something good happens, when something just happens to occur, that's when, you know, it's a growth industry. And it feeds off of it.
It's a growth industry. Oh, my God, it's all economics.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's face it, that we've seen network. We know it's all about money. It's not about nations. It's not about that. It's all about economics.
Yeah, and you know, you're in the chat room, too. I'm just sitting here looking at what Phase 5 just wrote. We had an exorcism here in Australia a few years ago. They killed the woman when they piled on top of her to force out the demons. They were still waiting for her to rise up as the coffin went into the ground.
Yes, it is perfect.
Just the same as with the parents of that cult that's centered largely in Oregon, but I think there's some of them in Minnesota and so forth, who deny medical treatment to their children and pray over them instead. How is that not criminally actionable? How does somebody not go to prison for that? And the same thing with this letter to the Irish Catholics. I know we're preached. I know that all Christian religions teach forgiveness to one degree or another, but it has to be predicated upon repentance. And to the extent that the Pope's letter says, well, you know, that we are hoping this will foster a spirit of repentance, healing, and renewal. That's fine, but the buggering priests have got to come out and ask for repentance, but they've got a problem because when they come out and ask for repentance, some prosecutor's going to say, fine, I'm down with your repentance, you're forgiven, now it's time to pay the legal penalty. And you see, the church's loyalty is higher to its priests than it is to its congregants.
Well, it's a variation of that old canard. Instead of, it's okay if you're Republican, it's okay if you're a Catholic priest.
No, it's okay, yeah, I-O-K-I-Y-A-B. It's okay if you're a bishop.
Yeah, it's just, oh, boy.
And, you know, and that brings us full circle back to the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. You know, when 59,000 nuns call your group a bunch of liars, you've got some institutional problems, because that's what those 59,000 American nuns did. I was frankly blown away by the fact that in the 21st century, there's still 59,000 American nuns, quite frankly.
Well, the thing is that this is what Malloy brought up, is that, I mean, look at what the Catholic Church kind of, look at how they consider women in their religion. I mean, they never, just saying, they aren't too big on, they haven't been too big on treating the ladies well.
To say the very, very,
very
least.
Oh, and can, to derail the conversation, just...
Oh, derail away, please.
You know how you were complaining about no split screens on the NCAA coverage?
Yeah.
That's because they have a specific channel on DirecTV for that.
No.
Yes. It's even worse. Once the here in Vegas, when we went, you know, digital during the tournament, the local CBS affiliate would have all of the games on digital sub channels, and it would be available for, you know, on cable as well. Not this year. Just two games out of the available ones at once.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're trying to push DirecTV and the website.
Dear God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, along these lines, the lines of the pop culture thing, I also have to say that I've had my first Tiger Woods sighting on a Masters promo. Finally, after like a week, CBS finally ran a promo for the Masters that it included about 0.75 seconds of Tiger Woods.
Well, you know what the thing is that it's only going to grow. By the time the NCAA tournament is over, he'll be pretty prominent in it. You know it.
Well, I was just blown away when ESPN was promoing it during tourney week, and he was nowhere to be found. It was just a bunch of white guys putting on coats.
Well, it's because they're afraid of this whole fear thing. First, they don't want to promote somebody who's not going to be present. Two, you know, they're worried about the backlash. I mean, the TV networks, the Masters isn't worried. I mean, this has been brought up multiple times in that whole scandal, is how they've been, how the Masters ignored that one lady that was protesting them for years in the late 90s and early 2000s because they didn't have any female members of their little club. Oh, I always forget her name, but, I mean, because they just shunted her off as far as possible and they ignored her. I mean, the Masters is great at doing that because they're a private club. they're a private club and they're held at the one. I mean, it's held by the one place. They can totally, you know, ignore anything to it. And of course, the TV partners aren't going to, you know, risk kicking off the event because, you know, millions of dollars, especially this year because, oh yeah, Tiger. It's gonna be pretty high ratings for that whole thing.
Yeah. Well, now that he's established that,
yeah,
yes, that's the
Tiger's
big comeback.
In it, Tiger's
right.
In it. It's definitely his first event. I mean, it's a total thing because they were discussing it. There was talk that he was going to go to the tournament that Arnold Palmer runs, but apparently Tiger's toadies checked in when visiting and checked out the security, and when they realized that keeping things under wraps for Tiger wasn't going to be necessarily possible, that's when they decided Masters instead of the tournament that Palmer runs or hosts or whatever.
Well, it'll certainly be fun. So were you rooting were you rooting for UNLV?
Yeah. I expected them to get freaking, even if they'd won last night, I expected them to get beat by Kansas, because I have Kansas winning the whole thing, although you won't like who they have to beat. It's, I had to pick against West Virginia.
Oh, yeah, you got Kentucky, right?
No, I got West Virginia in the Final Four and in the final game.
Do you really?
Yes. I'm not too well. First off,
well, see, I've got Kansas and WVU, but I've got WVU winning. But that's I think I'm about two brackets too loyal.
Yeah, I mean I just don't, because I have Butler in the Final Four I have Butler because they're a three seed or something. They have some weird. No, I have Baylor.
Baylor, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I have Baylor, West Virginia.
My Final Four is Kansas, West Virginia, Villanova, and Syracuse.
Yeah, because I have Kansas, Syracuse, West Virginia, and Baylor. Because Duke is.
Well, that's all I was going to say, Garrett. Somebody's got to do Duke.
Duke is probably going to get through this weekend. They're obviously going to win tonight, but no, they're horrible. Everybody, even the experts are like, why are they a number one? Everybody's like, because you were right earlier this week. Everybody freaking can't stand Duke. It's a love it or you hate it type of school.
Yeah, and nobody wants to listen. Nobody wants to watch Coach Weaselface pucker up and nearly cry.
Yeah.
Oh, I just do.
I don't have particular a horrible hate on, but I can understand perfectly why Duke. And I can certainly understand
they're the fourth number one seed and they get the cupcake region.
Yeah, that's the worst part. I mean, because they're calling Kansas as the region of death.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, granted, I won't.
And I don't. If WVU gets to face off against Kansas or against Kentucky, I don't think Kentucky's going to have a cakewalk, because the one thing that I admire so much and have just been blown away by is the way that Bob Huggins has that Mountaineer squad rebounding.
Well, yeah, I mean, but yeah, that's another funny thing. I mean, because you always talk about how WVU's coach for football is the, total Bible thumper. Bob Huggins is not an angel.
Oh, Bob Huggins is not a Bible thumper.
Yeah.
Well, no, he might, if that's what happens to be handy when you need thumping,
Yeah, I remember his glory days at Cincinnati, and being a Laker fan, I remember one of his most famous products being Nick Van Exel. I mean, Huggins is the closest thing we have to the next Jerry Tarkanian, really.
No, he has never been seen sucking on a towel, so you just take that back.
Well, other than that, I mean,
he's got much better hair.
The NCAA would love, well, he has hair.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Garrett, I got to run on, but great conversation, and have a wonderful weekend, and enjoy the games.
Yep, hopefully Kansas will lose to Vermont, but I don't expect to ever see it.
Oh, that would be sweet.
I'd love for my home state to be the first.
Oh yes, the Catamounts.
Yes.
All right, well, Garrett, you take care. We'll talk soon.
You too, Bob.
All right, later.
Later.
About 4 minutes past the hour. No break since I screwed up the. Beginning of the program, so we'll take a little one and come back. Gosh, this just seems way too appropriate under the circumstances. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. you're listening to the horn. Phoning in is easy. 877-443-2366. 877-444-HEAD-ON. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com. I give it up as being listener supported. March is proving to be a very difficult month.
Look at them bloody Catholics filling the bloody world up with bloody people they can't afford to bloody feed.
What are we there?
Protestant and fiercely proud of it.
Why do they have so many children?
Because every time they have sexual intercourse, they have to have a baby.
But it's the same with us, Harry.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, we've got two children and we've had sexual intercourse twice.
That's not the point. We could have it any time we wanted.
Really?
Oh, yes. And what's more, because we don't believe in all that papist claptrap, we can take precautions.
What do you mean? Lock the door?
No. I mean, because we are members of the Protestant Reformed Church, which successfully challenged the autocratic power of the papacy in the mid-16th century, we can wear little rubber devices to prevent issue.
What do you mean?
I could, if I wanted, have sexual intercourse with you.
Oh, yes, Harry.
And by wearing a rubber sheath over my old fella, I could ensure that when I came off, you would not be impregnated.
Oh.
That's what being a Protestant's all about. That's why it's the church for me. That's why it's the church for anyone who respects the individual and the individual's right to decide for him or herself. When Martin Luther nailed his protest up to the church door in 1517, he may not have realized the full significance of what he was doing. But 400 years later, thanks to him, my dear, I can wear whatever I want on my John Thomas. And Protestantism doesn't stop at the simple condom. Oh, no. I can wear French ticklers if I want.
You what?
French ticklers, black mambos, crocodile ribs, sheaths that are designed not only to protect, but also to enhance the stimulation of sexual congress.
Have you got one?
Have I got one? Well, no. But I can go down the road any time I want and walk into Harry's and hold my head up high and say in a loud, steady voice, Harry, I want you to sell me a condom. In fact, today I think I'll have a French tickler, for I am a Protestant.
Well, why don't you?
But they cannot. Because their church never made the great leap out of the Middle Ages and the domination of alien episcopal supremacy.
But despite the attempts of Protestants to promote the idea of sex for pleasure, children continued to multiply everywhere.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and they, hey, Bill, West Virginia, judicial hellhole, right? Oh, absolutely, judicial hellhole. Ever been there? No, not me. Ever know anybody that's been there? Are you kidding? West Virginia? Huh? Go ask Fred down the hall. Hey, Fred, West Virginia, judicial hellhole, right? Ever been there? Nope. But it's a judicial hellhole, right? Oh, definitely. Yeah, some judicial hellhole where nonviolent activists get $5,000 or $7,500 cash-only bonds while someone accused of child molestation walks free on, what, $150, $1,000, whatever? Yeah, I know. And, by the way... our dear friend Pumpkinface, John Boner, is back in the news. And even though he's still pretty steamed about the healthcare, health insurance issue, well, now he's steamed about something else, too, because all those dirty, stinking little prole children want to go to college. And so there is some Student Aid Fiscal Responsibility Act legislation. Which would be S-A-F-R-A, SAFRA, yes, Student Aid and Fiscal Responsibility Act, that would cut billions of dollars in stupid subsidies to private student lenders and just, I don't know, get the money to the students instead. make it much more affordable, make the student loan payback process much less painful. What does John Boehner say about it? Well, last night he declared, if you look at this student loan provision in there, they eliminate every bank in the country and all private student loan lenders so the government can do it instead. Do you see how it works, friends? With all those Maoists running around the Obama administration, you see how it works? They're trying to eliminate the banks. Really? Eliminate the banks after we just gave them all those trillions of dollars? And now we're eliminating them? The government can do it instead. Big, mean, nasty government trying to make sure its population's intelligent enough to get it through the 21st century. Oh, the founding fathers would not be pleased. They would not be pleased at all. There's only one problem. The subsidized private program that Boehner and his colleague Mike Enzi in the Senate want to preserve, it's called the Federal Family Education Loan Program. And by cutting out the middleman, billions of dollars will be saved and used for deficit reduction. But the money will also then be, in turn, used to increase Pell Grants. Pell Grants? Yeah. Grants. Not loans. Grants. And thereby increase the number of kids who can stay in college. I admit, I've got a vested interest in this. I've got a dog in this hunt, a horse in this race. Because here in West Virginia, if your kid doesn't go to college, he or she may wind up in some form of semi-involuntary servitude to the coal industry. And that's just not okay. And by the way, while this liar, the truth ain't in him, John Boehner, says that they eliminate every bank in the country. Well, the private lenders would still be contracted to service the loans, you know, collect the payments and so forth. What it does do, however, is pull the hogs of the banking industry. It pulls their back feet out of the trough. Now, don't worry, their front feet are still in it, but it takes their back feet out. Because that just makes the trough just a terrible, terrible mess. John Boehner. I wish he'd spend more time in his tanning bed and less running his mouth in Congress. We will go back to the phones, or not. You know how to reach the program, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333, 17 minutes past the hour. And just rolling along. Because, well, how do you ignore it? Well, this is just news. And nothing big. But somehow or another, it marks, I don't know, it marks the day. News coming out of Albany, New York today. One of the three men convicted of killing Malcolm X 45 years ago was granted release from weekends in prison in his 17th appearance before a state parole board. He was granted release effective April 28th. He'll remain in the Lincoln Correctional Facility in New York City, where he's been locked up 2 days a week for 22 years. Yeah, see, you kill Malcolm X, you get 2 days a week for 22 years. Right. So, let's see, 22 by 7. So, what? He is Thomas Hagen, 69 years old now. Back then he was known as Talmadge X. Talmadge X Hayer. After the shooting, the crowd beat him. Norman 3X Butler, known now as Muhammad Abdul Aziz, and Khalil Islam, then Thomas 15X Johnson, were also convicted of murder, but they maintained their innocence. They were paroled about 20 years ago. And so finally, I guess this case is going to be concluded. After he was denied parole in 2007, Hagen filed an appeal saying the denial was arbitrary and capricious. His court papers said he had taken advantage of each and all the programs and support systems that enabled him to lead a law-abiding lifestyle and that he had repeatedly expressed remorse for the shooting. One question. Where's John Hinckley? Where's Mark David Chapman? Where is Arthur Bremer? Now, those three guys shot white folks. Very famous white folks. John Hinckley shot Ronald Reagan. Arthur Bremer shot George Wallace. Mark David Chapman shot John Lennon. Two out of three ain't bad. Would have been kind of nice to have John Lennon around, like on today, you know, the anniversary of this god-awful nightmare in Iraq. They shot white guys. They're going to stay in prison. If you shoot a leader in the burgeoning, not quite so kumbaya singing black community, you know, you can serve some time, and then the rest of the time you can serve on weekends, and then we'll let you out. Right. Yeah. Which, from and please understand, when I say this, on the one hand, I feel sort of self-contradictory because we have a prison problem in this country. We have way too many people locked up for way too many dumbass reasons. But isn't this just a little bit curious? One of the men who murdered Malcolm X, all of the men who murdered Malcolm X, walked. Eventually, they got out. They went free. Not because it turned out that they didn't do it, but because, why? It didn't matter quite as much? Kind of hard to avoid that conclusion, isn't it? Oh, by the way, the horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner passed something along to me earlier today that I wanted to share with you. You know, we talk about everyday people taking up the activist banner. You heard from Boss Man Wayne last night talking about the struggle he is waging just for decent jobs for working West Virginians in Raleigh County, not just for, but the struggle he's engaged in for that. Well, I got this from Rick Goodner earlier today in regard to a video from someone by the name of Mike Conaway. The original note to Rick said, "I would like to take a moment to share a short video with you to keep you updated as to what is going on in Washington with regards to the Democrats' hazardous health care bill." Okay, that's the setup. The Democrats' hazardous health care bill.
Hi, this is Mike Conaway, and we're doing a pre-vote podcast on the health care bill. The language on the fix, the reconciliation bill, was released yesterday. It's another 153 pages. That is available at the Rules Committee website if you care to look at that. It does not fix all of the problems that even the Democrats had with the Senate bill. There are still things in there that are offensive to most all of us, but it does not, and it won't. And the fixes there certainly won't have the effect of having any Republicans vote for this bill. As you look at the mechanics that are going to happen over the next 72 hours, in all likelihood there'll be a vote on the House floor. During that time frame, the House members, the Democrat House members who decide to vote for this, do so with the clear understanding that they are adopting or enacting the Senate version The Senate
now,
version.
Hold on. Let's back up just a second. Let's back up just a second. Because I think we just may have just missed out on a little bit of wingnut code. You know, white winger code.
The House members, the Democrat House members who decide.
Oh, there it was. The Democrat House members. Not Democratic. Because remember, the name of the party is the Democratic Party, but going all the way back to Newt Gingrich's list of magic words, you don't call them Democratic, you call them Democrats, so that you can emphasize the word rat. When you hear someone refer to the Democrat Party, you know you're dealing with a white winger.
To vote for this, do so with the clear understanding that they are adopting or enacting the Senate version. The Senate version, as is, includes the Cornhusker kickback, the Louisiana Purchase, the Gator bait, the Union SOP that was put in order to get the 59 senators, all Democrats, to vote for that on Christmas Eve. That bill will become law. Now, the companion bill that will be voted on out of the House includes provisions that are, quote-unquote, supposed to fix the flaws in the Senate bill. And from a Democrat standpoint, it might do that.
Democrat.
I don't think as a practical matter, given the fight that our Republican colleagues in the Senate are going to put up over this reconciliation bill, which includes about 18 things that should not be in reconciliation, that bill will survive in the Senate. I can envision 4, 5, 6 weeks from now, Harry Reid simply throwing up his hands, telling the world that the Republicans are just too tough and they can't pass the reconciliation bill, which then means that the Senate version becomes the law of the land. It'll be signed by the president. So when you see the bill come out of the House, each of those 216 or 17 Democrats know that they are, in effect, adopting the Senate version. And in all likelihood, that's the version that will be enacted into law and that future generations will be having to deal with and cope with. There's really not a lot of changes. It does increase the employer.
Congressman Conaway, how about the 45,000 Americans every year who, via grim and dusty death, have to deal with the fact that you don't give a rotten rear end about them, their lives, their friends, their family, their sons, their daughters, their mothers, their fathers? What about what they have to deal with right now? Right now, Congressman, right now.
Penalty from $750 per employee for not having insurance to $2,000 per employee. It extends the date in which the Cadillac tax on Cadillac health insurance policies goes into effect from 2013 to 2018. It raises that limit to about $27,000 per family. That's a sop to the unions who enjoy those products. It's still...
Really? That's a sop? Have you ever thrown any sops, Congressman Conaway? Maybe to, let's see, you're from Texas, aren't you? Maybe to Enron? You ever thrown any, you ever voted on any no-bid contracts for, Blackwater? Or Halliburton? You ever thrown any sops, Congressman?
Has the $500 billion, half a trillion dollars in cuts to Medicare. It still has even higher tax increases. It raises the payroll tax on dividends and unearned income from zero to 3.8%. Those tax increases.
Really? It's going to raise taxes on unearned income and dividends? You mean in stock portfolios? Like the people that you like to throw sops to have? Okay, just checking.
Increases are in this in the fixed bill. So, all in all, it's not a good policy. Over and over, through every town hall meeting, every telephone town hall meeting, every conversation I've had, except a handful, people in West Texas and District 11, Central Texas, want us to scrap this deal and start over. Nobody wants to quit, and that argument is false. We still want to deal with things like tort reform, like pre-existing conditions. Like buying insurance.
Oh, tort reform? You mean that sort of red herring issue that doesn't have a damn thing to do with whether or not 45,000 people who are going to die this year? Yeah, you want to work on that real hard. Gee, Congressman Conaway, would working on tort reform constitute a sop to your corporate constituents? Just asking.
Across state lines, associated health plans, things that can actually move toward expanding health insurance coverage for more people at a price that can be afforded by those people. So the idea that scrapping this one is a quit is a false argument. It's a good debating point.
Okay, it's a good debating point. Then if it's a good debating point, then as a great debater in your own right, Congressman Conaway, I'm sure that the next word out of your mouth, the next line, the next sentence out of your mouth is going to be to tell us when you're going to start work on this bill, on this from the ground up bill after we've scrapped this one. When are you going to get to it, Congressman Conaway?
But it doesn't hold water. So stay tuned to the.
Stay tuned. Beep. We're experiencing technical difficulty starting work on the new health care reform bill now that we've scrapped the first one. Please stand by. Do not adjust your health. Beep.
The processes over the next 72 hours, you'll see the Rules Committee come out and bring a rule that might allow a fig leaf of an excuse that they didn't vote for the Senate bill.
Fig leaf, that implies nakedness. I like it when I can imply nakedness. Nakedness is fun.
But you and I both know that they have. And so adopting the rule will have passed the Senate bill. And there's really no hiding from that. They can try to that, but you are smarter than that. The American people are smarter than that, and they're going to have...
Did the voters in your district send you to the House of Representatives, Congressman Conaway? I'm assuming that since you're still Congressman Conaway that, in fact, they did. So I'm not willing to go with you on that debate point. I'm not going to debate. I'm not going to concede your point of the intelligence of the voters of the 11th Congressional District of Texas, because you dumbass, you miserable right-wing piece of... You're in the Congress. So I really, you know, whatever that weird majority was that sent you to Congress, I'm not going to concede their intelligence. Thank you. Sorry. Just can't do it. So that's what Rick Goodner, horn psychotherapist, had viewed when he wrote back to Congressman Conaway. Just doing the same kind of activism that I know we all do virtually every day here in the Horn family. Rick wrote to Conaway, Mr. Conaway, I could not view your video. Tech problems on your side. I'll try later. Okay. So, well, Rick, if you're listening, you just heard it, so no worries. I do want to thank you for being open and truthful with me when you said, and God bless our great country as we work to fight against what we believe is right for our citizens here in Washington. Oh, my God. Thank you, sir, for telling the truth that you are indeed working to fight against what you believe is right for our citizens. It is true that you are working to fight against what is right for our citizens. Thank you, sir, for showing that you are heartless in the face of 27% of the citizens in your district who have no insurance and that you've turned your back on and told them to die. Shame on you, and too bad that your God will not forgive you, for he said, what you do to the least of these, you do to me. And I pity you, sir. However, my pity for you will not stop me from working to turn you out of office. I just love Rick Goodner. What a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's about 27 minutes before the hour, and let's see what's going on the phone lines. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How are you?
Holding up.
Yeah. The least among us. I've been enjoying how Jim Wallace has been reminding the country that that's what those stories are about, and confronting Glenn Beck and his recent pronouncements. Are you getting, like, feedback?
Yeah, I am. I don't know what's going on here.
Okay.
Hold on. Okay, try again.
Okay.
Some better?
Yes, that is. And I don't know, have you caught any of Jim Wallace's response to, you know, Glenn Beck saying, you know, don't listen to those socialist preachers in your church. You got to leave those churches and all that kind of thing.
I did see it when he posted over at Huffington Post the threat that Glenn Beck followed with. I don't know. Did you catch that where he said, I'm going to hammer you and I'm going to hammer you all night long?
Oh, my God.
The one where Glenn Beck said, I'm going to respond to you, Jimmy, but I'll respond in my time. And that's kind of like God's time.
Odd fellow. But anyway, I think there are, you know, he is concerned, Glenn Beck is concerned about so many churches out there who are a threat to his perception of the world. I mean, even right-wing evangelicals who we saw as opponents so often are now becoming ego-wackos, as Rush Limbaugh would call them. You know, they're putting solar roofs on their churches. They're investing in wind power, you name it. There's a beautiful documentary about this called Renewal, and it's about the religious environmental movement. And the producers are really cool. They said they got a lot of money to make it, and they did a great job with it, but they said they received no funding to market it or distribute it. And it reminded me of so much of what we've spoken about regarding some of your own struggles and trying to create media.
Well, and you do know that a whole lot of Christian groups, well, I should say it's ecumenical because I think it was more than just Christians, spoke out demanding environmental justice for Appalachia this week, too. Did you happen to see that?
I had noticed. Some stirrings, yeah, definitely I had. That's good to see, too. I saw something about Appalachia on a website. Do you have a website, actually, where some of that material is?
It's kind of all over the place.
Okay.
I'm trying to think where I did see that.
But that's okay. Yeah. I'm sure I'll come across it. Yeah, and Beck seems to represent this church of, like, our holy fossil fuel makers or something. I mean, the coal industry and the oil industry. I'm sure they're funding some, you know, false preachers all around the country to...
Oh, without a doubt.
You know, just focus on the next world instead, and Armageddon's a good thing. Yeah, that's a shame. Well, that's an old story. I guess they've been doing that for a while.
That has been a tactic of theirs for a long, long time. They did it in the coal fields during the unionization days.
There you go. The CIA funded some preachers in, like, places like Guatemala. You know, they'd kind of linger around the garbage dumps where the extremely poor people would go and try to get food.
Right, in an effort to counter liberation theology.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly. Interestingly, there's a liberation theologist who's kind of moved up the ranks in the government of, I want to say, like, El Salvador or something, but he's become a representative at the United Nations and still pushing very much the same story of social justice, and it's good to see. In fact, I don't know if you noticed the last presidential election in El Salvador, but someone who was very close to Archbishop Oscar Romero won the presidency there. And it was so touching to see all these photos and portraits of Oscar Romero come out on the day of that election victory. You know, as moved as I was and so many people were by Obama's presidential victory for all of its symbolism and some real changes going on, some of the elections in these other countries also just really move me to tears at times and gives me a lot of hope. So Colombia's next. We need a new president in Colombia.
Oh, I think you're right. You know, that's the one place where we've got enough of a stronghold that I think we would not hesitate to engage in the same sleazy business we did in with Argentina and Chile, especially Chile.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Chile, that's another inspiring story. Michelle Bachelet, the president of Chile, she had been tortured by the Pinochet dictatorship. Her father died while being interrogated by them. And there she kept at it and kept at it and was elected president. And not only was she a survivor of torture, of oppression, but she's a single mom, which is often very, you know, not kind of frowned upon in Chile as well as here, and an atheist. So it's really, again, really remarkable. And then you have people, you know, kind of cultural advocates and creators like Isabel Allende, who's the daughter of Salvador Allende, who was overthrown by the Pinochet coup, which Kissinger liked so much, supported. And there she is out there in the world creating all this wonderful, all these great books. Amy Goodman interviews her regularly. And
you know, you just reminded me of something. Jim was talking earlier in the program, referencing just the manifest evil visible in the eyes of Dick Cheney. Is Dick Cheney just Henry Kissinger without the accent?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, they both growl and grumble. The only thing that made Kissinger more notable was the fact that he had that thick accent to go along with it.
Yeah, well, I wonder if someday Dick Cheney will win a Nobel Peace Prize too.
Dear God,
it would make about as much sense.
Oh, I could have gone all weekend without being reminded of that.
Okay. Hey, I want to mention I made an investment in a cause that you and I have been speaking about. I found a cool community-supported agriculture project.
Oh, wonderful.
Going on in a town. It's called Wellington, Colorado. That's where their farm is. It's about 50 miles from here, but they have drop-off points throughout Denver and Boulder, Fort Collins, some other places. And for your listeners who don't know, community support agriculture is when people, consumers, like, invest in what they call share of a farm. And then for the growing season, they'll receive, a basket of produce from that farm. It's local, saves on, transportation, fuel costs, and all that stuff. It's organic, typically. And so, and it doesn't get any fresher than that. So, and also, when all said and done, it often is cheaper because, you're kind of skipping the middle person. But anyway, it's a community building thing as well. And, a lot of people are able to go to farmers markets. That's another kind of, community farming project. But the CSA that I'm working with, they just invested in, they have about 1,500 members. And recently I noticed they partnered with a community radio station here in Colorado. And for each person who became a member, they would donate a pound of produce to a food bank.
We have some of that sort of stuff going on. We've got the volunteers who came into the Coal River Valley, who work with organizations like Mountain Justice and Climate Ground Zero. And I know that several baskets of produce were delivered down there just to help keep feeding them. And that was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and a healthier thing. You know, so much of the food and the food banks are, it's good to have something, but, a lot of it tends to be kind of high-calorie stuff, corn syrup, high-fructose corn syrup and all that stuff. In the midst of all the frustrations around, federal policies and the endless misrepresentations from the right wing and, the way even progressives have been kind of battling each other, like the whole Jane Hampshire thing, I also noticed that she was wondering if Kucinich was going to give money back to people who had sent him money in support of his stand regarding insisting on a public option. I thought that was really unnecessary. I mean, okay.
Well, it was. Among other things, Dennis Kucinich went on Amy Goodman and said he was going to do that.
Yeah.
But it's only unnecessary if you see yourself as more important than the issue.
Yeah. and also so many other important causes that he's an advocate for. You know, he's covering a lot of bases that I think a lot of his detractors don't have the courage to talk about in public themselves. So it's kind of infuriating to see someone putting it out there like that, have someone like kind of knock the legs out from underneath them. I don't get it. But anyway, solidarity, it's an important word, you know, I think that we need to practice more.
And it's, you know, it's very, very frustrating to me, Preston, to see that, you know, I want to see this bill passed. Not because I think it solves anywhere near the problems that we need to solve inside healthcare issues. And if the Medicaid buy-in is gone from it, then that takes away something that really, really did garner my support. But I'm selfish in this. I've got, you know, the kids we have here who aren't adults, they are 16, 14, and 13. They can't wait a generation for Congress to pick this up again. They just can't wait.
Yeah, and there's no reason why they should. I don't like that meme, that thought that keeps getting asserted that, you know, if we don't do it now, we can't return to it for 10 years. Says who?
Well, it says who, but the political realities, I'm afraid, Preston, are that they won't.
I don't know. I think that depends on what we do, people like us. I mean, there are issues that we can press, I believe. But, yeah, I do share a lot of your feeling about the need to do something. I'm not disputing that at all. But
and, my fear is what makes us think that if we scrap this bill and start all over again, we'll get a public option this time?
Yeah, something I found interesting.
Or more importantly, Medicare for everyone, you know, single payer.
Yeah, yeah. Every now and again, I'll, for like 5 or maybe 10 minute doses, I'll monitor some right wing stuff. And, today I flipped onto Rush Limbaugh and I heard him talk. He did a montage, an audio montage of Democrats talking about how this is to be a first step. Everybody from, I think he included Kucinich, but others who are like, we want to move to universal health care system. So they're holding that vision. And again, it's something that threatens the insurance industry, doesn't even want that vision spoken. I mean, when you were, like, just 3 years ago, if you were talking about single-payer health care or universal health care, it was usually a very small forum, but now it's getting national attention. Ed Schultz, you know, I think he's doing some good advocacy on this. T.R. Reid, who did that movie, the PBS Frontline presentation, Sick Around the World, he's getting, you know, Bill Moyers has spoken with him. So, again, just the growth in the consciousness of the issue has been huge. So I think that's very helpful as well. And actually, that's kind of connected to why I keep coming back to, like, community support agriculture issues, because so much of this health, you know, some other things that should be spoken about in terms of a health care debate, a serious one would be, you know, fast food.
Well, how about something as simple as preventative care?
Yeah, exactly.
Wellness, as it's referred to.
Yeah, and again, this movement is going on. It's just, I don't know, in some circumstances it doesn't get the same, I don't know, it just isn't spoken about.
Well, let me ask you, Preston, the converse to your assertion, and I think it is a right one, of a couple of minutes ago, namely, when you said, who's to say that we can't take it up next year or year after next? And without the attendant navel gazing about electoral process and progress and so forth, let's ask the question in the other direction.
Okay.
The folks who want this bill to fail and who are still progressive and or liberal, you know, Jane Hampshire and her friends, why can't they keep advocating after this bill passes?
Exactly.
Are they saying that they won't advocate after this bill passes?
Yeah.
Are they? I mean, because that's a very childish political position to say, well, you know, I'm going to take my ball and go home if I don't get it all my way.
Right.
You know, if you were willing to work this hard, and yeah, we got our hearts broken on a public option, but that's only because it was a weak solution for single payer. And you know, even a political realist like Bernie Sanders said, you know, I was going to introduce. And he did introduce. He had to withdraw it later.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, you know, I introduced the first single-payer amendment in the history of the Senate. And he said, I know I would have had maybe 8-10 co-sponsors, tops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it didn't have a chance. And to a certain extent, while I will never stop being an activist on a number of causes, I have to know inside my activism that just because you meet with frustration the first two or three times does not preclude your ability to do something the fourth, fifth, or sixth time, because that's not that within the realm of that definition of insanity business. That's called persistence. And one of the few things that I ever agreed with Calvin Coolidge on, there's a famous saying of his that ends, nothing can take the place of persistence.
Yeah.
And you know what? There are, what is it? There are 8 lobbyists for every member of the House and Senate on the Hill right now working against the American people getting some help with health care. Well, you know what? They understand the value of persistence.
Yeah, they are. They never stop. And I don't want to be unfair to Jane Hampshire. I mean, I didn't like that call to take money from Kucinich. I mean, what a hassle that's going to be for them. It's going to, first they're going to receive all these requests, then to turn around and what, mail them out. They got checks, they got electronic transfers. It's going to be just so time consuming on top of everything else. Again, diverting his staff away from what they should be attending to this. Big mistake. But anyway, I don't want to be unfair towards her regarding her position, and I'm curious to find the 18 myths that she wrote about. I'm sure there's a lot of insight there and things like that.
Well, I will email them to you after the show, Preston. I don't want to be unfair to her either. But you know what? And I guess this is patently unfair by definition. But she got her life saved 3 times. Why can't Americans who will die this year get saved once?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
She's a 3-time breast cancer survivor.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. You know, again, another issue that needs to break through on CBS, the Sunday chat shows, and 24 hours, CNN, Fox, whatever, cancer issues. You know, talk about a huge expense. What was it? It was 1 in 20 women were getting breast cancer 20 years ago. Now it's 1 in 8.
You know, yeah, or bring it home to here where I live. You know, Senator Rockefeller, who was, you know, very bold out there talking about wanting single payer, wanting a public option, and then folded his tents and ran away. But for all the time that he spent talking about health care, you can't get him to acknowledge that one of the greatest causes of the need for health care in his own state is the fact that he advocates the poisoning of his own citizens, his own constituents.
Again, those dirty bombs of industry going off all over the place.
I mean, I'm literally scared, Preston. I am literally scared. I mentioned it last night on the show. I'll mention it again. We're being told that there's a mine going in out our road.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even if they can find it, they say it's going to be an underground mine. Okay, so it's going to be an underground mine. How are they going to get the coal from the mine to the processing plant? They're going to drive it right past my house. My children are going to breathe that filth.
Yep. You know, we've got so much. We got new uranium mines starting up here, and it's a mess. For sure. But I was glad to see Sustainable Industries. It's an interesting magazine. They're having a conference here in Denver. Paul Halkin is going to be one of the speakers. So, you know, we're definitely taking steps back, but some of the steps forward are going on, too. I think Denver, well, we've got a couple windmill factories now and, you know, some mass transit going up. We actually have a couple agro-eco communities starting, kind of like instead of your kind of usual suburban sprawl development, they're like almost kind of like co-housing sorts of developments, and they involve big gardening areas in the center of the housing areas. Also a lot of denser arrangements, like I forget the term for it, but where they mix use of housing, shopping, and recreation stuff, so people don't have to drive all over the place to do those different sorts of things. They can stay in their neighborhood. Stapleton, the former airport area, Stapleton, that's one such kind of mixed-use development, new urbanism, that's what they call it. So, yeah, but still, the uranium mine and the cancers keep going up, and so once we address those issues, we'll save a lot on all these, you know, chemotherapy treatments, and, you know, a lot of it has some various dubious aspects of it as well. I think, again, there's some other sorts of approaches to healing from cancer.
Yeah, indeed.
So, anyway, and also, well, preventing it would be a great idea. And,
well, and so many of these aren't the functions of normal human living, Preston. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. They're functions of what human beings are subjected to. You know, just, you know, look at the number of deaths from heart disease and pulmonary disease and, yes, cancer that come from the amount of filth spewed into the air and water every year by the simple fact that we don't have that much interest in windmills or solar panels, and we're far more content to simply continue burning coal, you know?
Yeah, and now we're dumping all these toxins all over the land.
Well, you know, it's not that far from you that coal fly ash was used to melt ice on the Platte River in Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. You
know, yeah, and the child oncology departments of hospitals in like rural Nebraska, they're just packed with kids. So. Yeah, so much unnecessary suffering. But someone, before I let you go, Denver actually made a little bit of history in a way recently. It was one of the first cities where someone proposed banning, I think about a dozen known carcinogens that are put in cosmetics, lead, formaldehyde, arsenic, and her name's Diane Primavera. It lost. It didn't make it out of committee, but... still, again, it's such a good sign of the growing consciousness about this stuff. She proposed this bill, and there are more on the way, and I think it's going to win in the future. And everybody will have access to the same sort of unharmful cosmetics that you can find at a Whole Foods. And, you know, it shouldn't be. You know, it's like the upper classes are comfortable. So they tend to not make so much noise about it, and they have access to this stuff. But
yeah, but not the pros.
Exactly. It needs to be more, you know, egalitarian, right? Isn't that the word?
There you go.
Egality, fraternity.
Liberté, égalité, fraternité.
Sounds good. Right on. Yeah.
Well, Preston, have yourself a wonderful evening. Good to hear from you, and I hope to hear from you again soon. Have a great weekend.
You do the same. Bye.
All right. Bye now. Calling from Denver. Our resident optimist, that's Preston. Good to hear from him. Hadn't heard from him in a while. You know, we worry when we don't hear from you. And that's the program, and that's the week. I got a note during the program that there will not be a brand new action point with Cynthia Black. She says that her computer had a serious meltdown this morning. Won't be up till again next week, so she says, my sincere apologies. Well, I'm just bummed out because I won't get to hear it. It's an awesome program. But that's okay. Rick Smith and the Rick Smith Show are coming your way this weekend, as is All Foxed Up with John Fox, assuming that we don't wind up playing hooky again like we did last Sunday night, fixing stuff here. A gentle reminder. This march is proving incredibly difficult just because we're being hit with a bunch of stuff that we were not planning on being hit with. This is not directed toward our usual regular contributors. But if you haven't contributed to the Horn in a while, a couple of months, say, and the Horn actually matters to you, we desperately need your help. I hate even putting it in those terms, but it's the truth. We desperately need your help. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So is the snail mail address. You know, Kate calls in and says, you know, one of these nights we're going to tune in and there's just not going to be anything there. We stay closer to that eventuality than I ever even let on. And this is another one of those times. So if you can, it will be mightily and sincerely appreciated. In the meantime, thanks go out to all of you who do keep this going on, who do believe, who do know that there is a need for liberal, independent conversation in this country, and think that the Horn is doing that as good or better, as well or better than anyone out there. Thank you. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sue. Thanks to Sue also for her in her capacity as co-webmistress of the headonradionetwork.com website. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, burning the candle at both ends for oh so many years, Ben has, at whiterosesociety.org. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, at Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. Their work speaks for their heroism. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, now this thing's on. It might be a little bit weird tonight, but you know what? We're going to get through just the same, one way or the other. It's 6 minutes past the hour. I'm a little bit late to the program. And, I've been out and about today. In fact, I just got in from Charleston. Came racing up the mountain and missed the mark just by a matter of a few minutes. So I apologize for that. On the other hand, I wouldn't have missed this Friday for the world simply because it's a beautiful day outside in wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia. It's just awfully, awfully nice. And made better so by the virtue of the fact that my beloved Mountaineers did make it past their first round test in the big dance in the NCAA basketball tournament. But this is not a sports program. I have to keep reminding myself that, boy, they looked good. Nobody rebounds quite like the Mountaineers. But this is not a sports program, and I don't want to run anybody off. So I'm hoping this thing is now going. It certainly looks like it is to me. Silly me. See, I'm not even into the chat room yet. But I'll get better. I'll be better just as soon as I am able, as it says in Rocky Raccoon. All right, okay. So this thing's on, right? Chat room, everybody? You hear me? Just let me know anytime. I hope this thing's running. Oh, the joys of radio on a shoestring. But at any rate, we'll get through these 3 hours, or not quite 3 hours now, because it's Friday on the front porch on the Horn, and, well, we try to take things a little bit lighter, take things a little bit easier, take things a little bit, I don't know, maybe with our tongue in cheek, or maybe not, depending on what kind of stories that we get into. And we've got a couple, without a doubt, that are absolutely stunning in what they show. But since we do take things a little bit lighter on these Fridays on the front porch, just a little something funny out there for you, in case you hadn't heard it. This is the audio of quite possibly the most brilliant skewering of that moron, Glenn Beck, that has ever been done. Now, because of some technical stuff going on here, it might be a little bit, I think. Jon Stewart last night on The Daily Show, and granted there are a lot of visuals, but the verbiage is magnificent as well. Jon Stewart peeled Glenn Beck like a grape. And I offer this mainly, A, if you haven't seen it, and B, as an example of how to deal with right-wing haters. Of the fact that laughter is an antiseptic in many ways. And with that in mind, let's just have a quick listen. Any minute now. I hope.
America, I thought, as perhaps Teddy Roosevelt did, that some basic protections backed by the legal authority of the United States government, if necessary, could enhance all of our pursuit of liberty and happiness and life and what I didn't know. Is that to even entertain that thought makes me a progressive. And that's not good.
Progressives think they know better than you do. They want to control every aspect of your life.
I didn't know that that's what I wanted, but I guess I want to control every aspect of your life. As a progressive, I might say, I think it's a good idea for an agency to monitor pollution. But I guess what I really mean is, it's in the state's interest that we be allowed to put a chip in your head that tells you when you can masturbate. Total control.